Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June, 25th. Let me double-check the date on here and write the date down today. Yep, June 25th. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449389#. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's efforts to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be, we'll pick up where we left off in the Gospel of John, chapter 1. We're going to pick up in verse 19. So chapter 1, verse 19. And this is the record of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who art thou?" And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, "I am not the Christ." And they asked him, "What then, art thou Elijah?" And he saith, "I am not. Art thou that prophet?" And he answered, "No." Then said they unto him, "Who art thou, that we may give an answer to them that sent us? What sayest thou of thyself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as saith the prophet Isaiah." And they which were sent were of the Pharisees. And they asked him and said unto him, "Why baptize thou then, if thou be not that Christ, nor Elijah, neither that prophet?" John answered them, saying, "I baptize with water, but there standeth one among you whom ye know not. He it is that who cometh after me is preferred before me, whose shoe latchet I am unworthy to unloose." These things were done in Bethabara beyond Jordan, where John was baptizing. The next day John seeth Jesus coming unto him, saith, "Behold, the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sins of the world. This is he of whom I said, After me cometh a man which is preferred before me, for he was before me. And I knew him not, but that he should be made manifest to Israel. Therefore am I come, baptizing with water. And John bare record, saying, I saw the Spirit descending from heaven like a dove, and it abode upon him. And I knew him not, but he that sent me to baptize with water, the same said unto me, Upon whom thou shalt see the Spirit descending and remaining on him, the same is he which baptizeth with the Holy Ghost. And I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God." Okay, that was the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verses 19 through 34, and we'll pick up on the rest next week. Okay, let's see. I don't have anything particularly to talk about tonight. Do we have any questions or anybody that wants to make an announcement or anything? I guess, Terry, you're here with the board tonight?
Yes, I am. There was one announcement that we're answering a question that we talked about last week about the Jural Societies in California, and he found a URL that links to that. Did you see that message?
No, I didn't.
Okay. It's rather lengthy. If you want me, I'll read it. If not, then we'll just leave it alone.
Well, if it's something beneficial, I know there are some things. I know there's a Jural Society. I don't know if it's a Jural Society, but there is a jury that's a standing jury in California, been standing for quite some time, quite a few years. It's got the same foreman from day one. That is totally inappropriate. Foremans need to change from case to case, or if they're handling a group of cases over a period of time, then they need to change. And that seems to be that individual is a professional position. And, of course, again, that is not to be. So if that's the society that they're talking about and they're active in the courts out there in California, is that the one they're talking about?
It sounds like it. They're based on a Christian organization based on biblical principles, common law, and the Constitution.
Okay.
And it sounds like they're almost a shadow or a separate government. Because they say that the Jural Society is supreme in the county.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again, that's something that if it's the same group set up the way that I just said, it's totally inappropriate, and they've made some errors. And again, I don't know that they're so much operating under the common law and how they define the common law. The lawyers define the common law as a collection of decisions from the federal, for instance, in the federal courts, for instance, a collection of decisions on the federal level. Whereas even the lawyers on the state level, they will presume common law being a collection of decisions of different cases within the counties across the state, and collectively that's their quote-unquote common law. Nothing could be further from the truth. Look, at the only good decisions, any decision that is not made particularly by a United States Supreme Court in itself, a decision-making thing, really doesn't have automatically too much weight behind it. Although there are cases that are clear, you know, where statements are made and positions are put forward, and it's obvious that these are, you know, truths, and of course they could be held up and also quoted. A lot of the things we get as far as U.S. Supreme Court rulings usually come out of Black's Law, which is what we mostly use. Of course, we use other dictionaries too, but Black's Law is kind of the first one that we look at in the fourth edition. And almost every time they give a meaning of a word or a different thing or a phrase or some situation like that, we would get a usually some Supreme Court case rulings to look at and see the context, and it's almost always usually the United States Supreme Court rulings, and of course that's the important ones. That would also include the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, that would include appellate rulings also, all the way up on the top level. But the final word, of course, is the United States Supreme Court. But those rulings again, they're only for equity courts. They have nothing to do with a common law court as far as a court of record is concerned, because a court of record really is very much interested, of course, in the facts and truth, and ultimately the law of its laws of nature, not of man. And then are guided very often by Supreme Court rulings or things of that nature. And they shouldn't be, because generally a case has a specific focus, you know, maybe a robbery or a murder or some, you know, somebody injured severely, you know, from someone who was angry or whatever the case may be. Generally, you know, the focus is in on the facts, and then the decision comes from the heart. And from justice, the last thing that's to be considered, of course, is mercy. That's the end part of the heart. But ultimately, justice is looked at by, you know, restoring the injured party. That is the key and that is the focus. But anyway, I know this group out there in California that I'm thinking of, they're very statutory. They uphold statutes, and that is repugnant to the common law. And no jury should ever hold up any statute. If someone was to bring a statute to them, and again, that could be a problem. I'd have to think a little more before I want to answer that. But maybe next week we'll talk about that, statutes and a grand jury. Well, you know, let's put it this way. Lawful statutes, okay, can be considered by a jury, and a lawyer could bring a lawful statute up. But it would be totally inappropriate for a prosecutor to bring up a statute that is not lawful, that is not that would be repugnant to the Constitution. And it's also out of order for the judge even to bring up those statutes. Of course, they do this all day long because we're under a civil law, a statutory court, which runs a civil court and a criminal court, both of which are not courts of record, both of which, you know, operate under statutes, they're civil courts, and that's a major problem for us. We have lost our courts of justice. Now, every once in a while, we do, of course, get rulings from a jury that is just, and I don't know how often that is, but clearly the cases against the state, where an individual is coming up against the state, usually, and is, you know, maybe being convicted of something that the state is putting upon a person, usually a statutory thing, well, that is unjust, and that certainly would not be a court of record. Although, that's all we have at this point, and it's a serious problem, and that's why we need to do what we're doing here. We need to go after the judiciary. I've mentioned this numerous times. We do need money to do it, not millions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, but a few thousand dollars. And so anybody out there with some deep pockets, you know, we look out there and we see a lot of these movements and different things, and a lot of the movements, and even movements that appear to be good, or start off as being good, and all of a sudden they got a lot of money, and then all of a sudden you see the directions turning. They're being controlled by who? The people who are giving them the money, you know, so that becomes a problem. We've rejected money in the past by large groups, which we knew wanted to kind of guide us in this direction or that direction. We've rejected them all, and some big individuals, as a matter of fact. You know, it's unfortunate that there doesn't seem to be many people out there that are patriots that have deep pockets. But if there happens to be any, they should consider supporting this movement that we got going here to bring justice back into our courts. That group that I'm thinking of in California is definitely nothing to do with what we're really doing. Far off base. And it's totally unjust for a foreman to be the same foreman consistently, especially when a case is done. You know, what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance is dealing with cases. Our whole focus is dealing with subversion. And so, you know, we do have a foreman, and we will maintain the same group of people, which really we open our doors to anyone at the time we call for a grand jury, so anybody can come into that meeting and listen and review the case and then listen and then participate. But at some point in time, once we deal and finish with subversion, you know, we have to decrease, and common law grand juries on the local level must increase in a major way. Of course, that requires an education, too, and if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it, as Jefferson said, and if you expect to have a court of justice without having the knowledge of the basics and the principles of common law, forget about that, too. It's not going to happen. There is no easy way around it, and people need to educate themselves. They need to come to an understanding of how the process works, and even, you know, and especially people who want to be administrators in the court, which are people to assist the grand jury, people who orientate the grand jury, guide them, help their writing of the papers and the conclusions of the case and so on, helping them to write an indictment. That's what the administrators would be doing, and that requires a certain amount of education. We're not talking about anything really, you know, like years of education, but we are talking, you know, some good solid education for maybe 6 months to a year, really focused, you know, continuing your education as time goes on, as anybody would do in any kind of a career system that they're involved with. But anyway, we have to be careful of those things, and make sure, and this would be the job of the administrators of the grand jury. We need four people in every county across the nation. And again, as I've said in the past, that's a paid position. But we need to make sure that, you know, they do not do injustice, that they do not push their ideas upon the grand jury, because that, too, would be tainting a grand jury and or even a trial jury. And that's a crime, so we have to be very careful with that. But anyway, anything else?
There was one about, I can read it, it's pretty quick. I just wanted you all to be put on notice of the complaint that I have filed against the DHS workers' CAO office that have been violating my rights and altering government documents, deleting and omitting documents to keep me poor and prevent me from sufficiently prosecuting the many appeal that I have filed against them for miscarriages of justice and violating the constitutional rights of the poor and indigent by official misconduct. And then they were pleading for somebody to call a number. That's all I have on that. And that's the only one, other one that I found. So those two are what we had this week.
Okay. All right. Are there any announcements to be made? Anybody's got anything that they want to bring up, and any points to be brought up before us tonight? Terry, are you aware of anybody?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Nobody's contacted you or anything. All right. If anybody has a particular thing they want to bring up, you can get into the queue right now, *6 to get into the queue. Anybody who has a particular announcement, you know, one of the leaders here with National Liberty Alliance that maybe wants to inform somebody of something, get into the queue and we'll unmute you and get ready to move forward after that. I see New York Jim is there. Jim, go right ahead. You wanted to bring a point up for announcement? You got the mic.
Yeah, good evening, John. Yeah, I just a little update on non-judicial foreclosures that we take care of. I know a couple of weeks ago we had a lady that called in, and she was all distraught over things that were happening with her. It seemed like they gave her a notice to get out of her house and stuff like that. And then over the weekend, in the mail, she got a letter stating that all of that stuff has been taken care of, and her loan has been satisfied and everything. So she was all ecstatic about it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether that's a win or whether...
That's a win if she doesn't have to leave her home and...
Well, it wasn't from the attorney. It wasn't from the attorney's office. It was from the loan company. So maybe
that's okay. That's okay.
Maybe
once they withdraw. That's it.
Well,
did we do a non-judicial foreclosure for this person?
Yeah, it was the one that we were questioning about whether we should have actually went down that road with the non-judicial, mm-hmm. because they may have been actually going about a foreclosure in the right way.
So we served the papers onto the mortgage company, and we served the papers onto the judge in the court, and it appears that maybe the response was because of the paperwork that we filed. I mean, we've had one or two of these that went the right direction, and this would be maybe the second one we've had. They're rare, but, you know, it's helpful. And again, you know, people are losing their homes at some point in time. Once we accomplish our goal, which is to bring justice back into the courts, you can be, get restored at some point in time, because then we'll have courts of justice. And if you can't, for some reason or another, can't get your very home back, you should definitely get the value of that home back and be able to, you know, start up again. But restitution is the key here. But anything else, Jim?
Well, I'm just, I'm perplexed because I'm thinking maybe with the tides are changing and who knows? I mean, maybe the dam is breaking and it's just going to go our way. I mean, that's all we can do. I mean, I know that everybody out there is, you know, probably not on their knees in church praying, but they're certainly praying that it goes our way, and this could be just the thing that we need.
Yeah,
and,
well,
I'm trying to lift up everybody's hearts with that, you know.
And that could be it. And one of the things about our paperwork, and the key part of our paperwork, is the fact that we're letting these people know they're breaking the law. We know exactly how they're breaking the law. The whole thing's a con job. It's a con. And there's a game going on between the mortgage companies and the judicial process, or shall I say, the judges. And it's revealing the fraud. And this is exactly what we do when we fill these papers out. We reveal the fraud to both parties and make the point to back off, because if this thing goes forward and you don't back off, you're going to have to restore this individual. So maybe, times are changing, pressure is on, deep state is falling. I think it's only a matter of time. If anybody's paying attention and watching what's going on, it's really an exciting thing to watch. And I feel pretty confident about the work that President Trump is doing and the people working behind him, all the forces behind him. And, of course, we're in there, too. And maybe the judges are finally getting the word. Maybe the mortgage companies are starting to get a little worried, and that's a good thing. So, all right. Anything else, Jim?
Oh, sure. Why not? I might as well bring it up, since I'm on here. I also got an email today about somebody that wanted to advertise on our website,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted to know what the rates were for advertising. So
well,
that they
we don't
could,
really do advertising per se, and we're very careful in what we might put up there that might be able to help support us and something that's appropriate, you know. Food, for instance, is an appropriate thing. Medical coverage and things of that nature that might be helpful. What kind of a business is it?
Oh, it's just a pro Second Amendment rights group.
Oh, well, they don't need to
one of the many.
Well, if they're compatible with us and they're doing the right thing and we feel confident that they're compatible with us, we'll put put something on the website, an icon for them, people to go over, take a look, see what they got going. But why don't we talk about this offline and we'll see if we're compatible. I mean, we'll exchange banners or something. You know? Maybe.
That's what I was thinking, kind of a, what do they call that, quid pro quo or something? You know,
well, I don't know,
one scratches
banners,
the back. Yeah.
Exchange banners with people that you feel that are compatible and on the same track that you're on. At least that's what we do. You know, we don't want to work with anyone that would be inappropriate in opposed to what we're doing. So, all right.
No.
Anything else?
No, here? I don't think we're going to get anybody like that that's going to want to be on there. But this looks like it could work out. So,
all right. We'll
like
talk
I said,
about
we'll
it.
Talk about it some more. Right. Okay. Other than that, no. I guess.
All right. Thank
in a great
you, Jim.
State of confusion. That's about
right.
it. All right, we'll talk
okay.
later.
All right. Let me see if let's see. Who's from New Jersey? Do you have an announcement to make?
No,
Culpepper?
I don't have an announcement.
See?
No,
okay.
But I did want to bring up an article that I read in the Drudge Report today. A couple sentences here says Trump aides urge to get a gun. It says here, facing a new wave of potentially dangerous threats called for by a top Democratic lawmaker, legal and gun experts are calling on top Trump aides to get their concealed carry permit and back it up with a pistol. Quote, there are simply not enough police in D.C. or Virginia or Maryland to protect all Trump officials at their homes and when they go out to restaurants. Getting a concealed handgun permit would be helpful to protect themselves and their families, said John R. Lott, Jr., president of the Influential Crime Prevention Research Center. So I just wondered if you have any thoughts on that and whether or not maybe...
Well,
that
probably came up because of what happened to Sarah. I guess she was out with her family or something, and then they refused to serve her, and then there were some threats were made, and so on and so forth, and that's probably why that story came up. But look, I don't know that I'd worry so much. People are trying to get violence going in the streets, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think it'll go very far anyway. But I don't know. I don't have any other comments about that other than people should do whatever they feel they should do. If they feel that they need to do something to protect themselves, then they should do that. That's a personal opinion, you know, personal decision. So, all right, let me move on. And if you got any more questions or comments, you can, get back into the queue. I see Crystal's coming up here, so let me go to Crystal because she's got some things, interesting things going, and then after that we'll move over to Brent. Crystal, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Hello.
And I see you've been trying to get me this week. I've been totally unavailable.
I
mean, really
I understand.
Weird.
Okay, there was something I sent you. Have, and I said, what's been going on? With this appellate, I filed with this appellate court where the judge said, I don't care, you know, whether you have life use or whatever the case is, you're going to be out. And thank God everything is, I'm still in my home. I got the papers in for the appellate, which is 45 days to respond. But as I said, it's just like when I asked them, I said, well, I have my warranty deed. The quick claim, I have life use. And it was funny, when I pulled my records and stuff today, it's all in all my documents. You know, so I said, well, who's going to change? He goes, well, you don't have to worry about that. It's going to be done. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I just, the papers I had filed in the court, so I'm going to return everything because they sent, they took papers out of my file and said, we do not accept this. And it was all stamped with the court, so I'm going to make the copies and I'm going to send them right back because, and they sent it back to me without no signature, no date, you know? And, so I'm going to make copies, and I'm going to just, you know, and I'm, and by the way, I did receive a letter. First, they said I can never, the first one for the federal court, they said I cannot file an appeal again because I'm a serial bankruptcy.
And so a serial bankruptcy, huh?
Yes, of serial bankruptcy, right. So I can't do anything with that for a year. Then I got a letter from the crazy attorneys, and on there from the appellate, they said, I am prohibited to file with the appellate court. So I can never file. I said, wait a minute. Isn't this violating my constitutional rights? When I send a subrogation, they never answered me. So I found I got to do the affidavits because they never answered any of the questions. Show me proof of claim.
Well, look at if they've never answered, you got to do a default. Did you do a default on them?
Yes, I did.
And
the judge said...
And then,
hold it.
Before you go any further, you wrote papers. You filed it in the court.
Absolutely.
They were to respond. They had X amount of days to respond. They did not respond. Correct?
Right.
Okay. Now you move the court for summary judgment and the subject. If the court refuses summary judgment, that's when you move it over into the Court of Appeals or appellate system. You know, it's unfortunate we got to go through that process, but again, you know, that's where we may get a little bit of help there, possibly.
Okay.
And you're already in the federal court, so, you know, but that's what I would do. I'd write a paper right away and move for summary judgment.
Summary judgment, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hold on 1 minute. Terry, what does Jan do back?
He's due back tomorrow.
Tomorrow. All right. Well, maybe during this week. I mean, tomorrow's a busy day for me. Let's see. Tomorrow, let me look at my board here. Tomorrow's a busy day for me. Wednesday might be a good day. If you get a hold of Jan, and then Jan will find me, and the three of us can get, and we can talk a little bit about you know, that particular paper. I mean, it's
okay,
a very simple
was,
paper. There's not much to it. A couple of pages and you're done.
Okay. And one other question, too, because I listened to the last week's call I was on. You also mentioned about a class action lawsuit or if we put something together. And instead of hiring an attorney that we could sit there and put that together, how much would that cost?
I'm not sure I understand. We wouldn't do a class action lawsuit.
No, we don't want a class action, but if we want to file for a lawsuit or whatever against them, what's going on with these attorneys and stuff?
Well, you mean what we're going to try to do?
Right.
National Liberty Alliance as a whole?
Right.
What we want to do from the perspective of the grand jury, okay,
mm-hmm.
we want to sue the judiciary. Because the judiciary has stolen justice, and that's one of the things we want to do. I was thinking about this over the weekend also, and I listened to some things, you know, that Trump had brought up and some other people have brought up, and it's so depressing and disturbing that people really don't understand what liberty is. They don't understand what common law is. They don't understand the court system. They don't understand the Constitution. I mean, yeah, they have some basic ideas. And they kind of have a feeling of what their rights are, but they really don't understand the process and how they've stolen everything from us. And, you know, and the reliance that these people have on the minions of the New World Order, which are the lawyers, the bar attorneys.
Right,
these
exactly.
bar attorneys are statutory, and they're going to give them a statutory answer and a statutory response. And,
well,
and even some of the attorneys that may not realize you know, that they've really gone astray. They've already been programmed, you know, in their schooling. And And of course, they get insulted if someone, you know, without a bar license or didn't go to their bar school and might say something, you know, who are we that we should know anything better than they should, because, of course, they spent all this money and took all this time to go to school, and they got to have it right. They don't understand even what we're talking about. And it's kind of depressing. And I'm thinking of doing a paper and information from the grand jury to Donald Trump, which we've done one or two before in the past, but a real serious one, talking about how justice has been stolen and lay it out so he really understands it. I think it would end up being quite long information, but it would be an educational information and hopefully one that would really empower him to move forward in things on his own knowledge, and he's the guy that would do this without the attorneys. Because the attorneys are going to hold us back. The attorneys are going to bring this back to the statutes. I mean, I heard President Trump talking about, for instance, a situation where, you know, the Senate makes a vote. They got the stupid rule over there that they have to have 60 votes to win. That is so far off the Constitution, it's pathetic. The purpose of the 60 senators, the 100 senators to begin with, it's a 50-50 vote. And if there's a tie, then the vice president gets the decision, and that's the way it goes. This whole thing is a rule that they've come up with on their own, and I'm looking into the background of that, what exactly, how that rule came about to be. But it certainly is not what the Constitution says. And I think the president has to get bold enough to push the paperwork and push and work with whatever they got in the Senate and push the paperwork through and say, hey, it's passed. It's on. You got 51 votes. Let's go forward. This is what he's got to do. But that's a bold move. To make a bold move like that, you have to have knowledge and confidence that you can do that. And he also needs to understand, and the governors need to understand, and this could be done through nullification. We don't need to go to the courts to ask permission to make any constitutional changes or anything. Just nullify it and do what the Constitution says. And that is to bring the senators back over to where they belong. The balance of power and authority has been broken when they moved the senators to be elected by the people. The people already had representation. They have Congress. And maybe we need more congressmen. I don't know. You know, there is a focus on so many numbers of people and so many congressmen.
But that could
work out. But let me finish this point. The point is this, is that the senators, okay, were taken, the whole process was to take the power away from the states. The states have no vote. They have no say. They have no control over anything. They have lost their power. They have been neutered. They have nothing because how do they push Congress? How do they push, the federal government to do what the state wills them to do? They used to do that through the power and the authority of the Senate. They get to the way the Constitution is written, it's very clear, okay,
right,
is that the senators were to be chosen however the states want to do it, but generally it was chosen ultimately by the legislators of the state. I know here in New York it was where the governor would bring up a name or two for senators. And then the legislators would vote on them, and then they send those senators out to Washington. And if they didn't do the will of the state, not the will of the senator, not the will of the funny money people, no, the will of the state, if they didn't exercise that will of the state, they could be recalled and replaced at any time at will. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it was meant to be. Right now, they have robbed the vote of the states. The states have no control over the federal government. They have no say. They have no representation whatsoever. You know, we wrote a paper to the governors concerning this, and we explained it very clearly, but none of them reacted to it. But it's an Article 5 particularly, that we read. Let me just read this, and then I'll give the mic back to you. This is in the Constitution, Article 5. It is very clear. It says at the end of Article 5, no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Equal suffrage means equal vote. Okay? So they shall not be deprived of that. A, it's common sense. It's the balance of power. It's the body of the Constitution. Okay? And they changed that. And as a matter of fact, that's the 17th Amendment. And as a matter of absolute fact, the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment were never ratified. The whole thing was done and pushed forward by a small group in Congress and through the Senate, but it's never, ever, ever been ratified. Okay? They tried to push it to ratification. It didn't meet the criteria, the number of votes to do it. So not only is it, you can't change the balance of the Constitution, you know, that has been negotiated away, negotiated to come to a point where there is a balance of power, particularly. It's the body of the Constitution, and then just change it and take away the power of the state. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. So that's a serious problem. The president needs to understand that. The governors need to understand that. And it could be rectified very simply by the states just picking up their power and saying, you know, get rid of the senators that are there. We're not going to allow senators to be elected by the people. This is our representation. And send two senators in under the authority of the state, the governor and the legislators, to do the will of that state. And every state should do this. Every governor should do this. And the president should spearhead this. And we're going to do an information and talk about that problem and many, many other problems. Like I said, it's going to be a lengthy information. But if we're going to make America great again, we'll never keep it great until we can move back to the rule of law and get the Constitution applied and enforced upon these people. But go ahead, Crystal.
Okay. One thing you left out, John. Number one, the Congress and senators, who are they? They're all attorneys. So it's the devil plus the devil equal the devil. So they can understand. So they can push yay or nay. And attorneys are not even supposed to be there and make any laws, you know?
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah, and see, people got to realize it. It's the majority of them are attorneys.
Well, I agree 100% with you, and that is part of also I was thinking about this to put it through. I've got a copy of the original 13th Amendment written in the congressional papers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The original 13th Amendment written in the congressional papers, okay? And it is clear, you know, we do have some wording of this type in the Constitution itself, okay? I think it's in Article 1. Section 9 or something, I think, if I recall. I'm taking a quick look to see if I can find it. Well, it's Article 9, Clause 8. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. Okay? And no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, and this is where the problem came in, but they don't even have the consent of the Congress, except of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatsoever from the king, prince, or foreign state. Now, the problem is Congress is filled with people with titles. To be an esquire is a title. No matter what you do, it's just one step below a knight. It's an esquire. That is a title. And they have a special authorities in the courts, and they hold these offices of trust. Now, the 13th Amendment is much more clearer than that. They can't hold office, okay? And that disappeared sometime between the early, I forget exactly when it was done, but it was done early on, in the very early 1800s it was done on. But by the time 1865 came about, it kind of just disappeared. It just wasn't there anymore. They just removed it. Are we that stupid? You know, I guess we really are. We have to admit to that fact that we're pretty dumb. We've been suckered over and over, and we continue to allow them to sucker us. Well, it's time to step up, bring the truth to the table, make the argument, and bring back the necessities through nullification. Just tell them the way it is and ignore them. It's got to start off with the governors, and the president needs to lead this. He needs to take the leadership role in this and to really take his bully pulpit and start moving the governors to take back the power that is rightfully theirs. And so that's what we need to do. You know?
Yeah, because right now all these attorneys are fighting each other on both sides.
Yeah, and there were so many. There were so many things. Like I said, this will be a very lengthy, very, very lengthy information because, you know, to cover all these bases, you know, the 17th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, to deal with this problem, particularly with the senators, but even more than that. I mean, the fact that the justice has been stolen by the judiciary. The fact that we do not have access to a court of record whatsoever, it doesn't exist any place. Okay, we open it up in our courts. We have a right to open it up, and they keep trying to shut it down. And that's what they're doing to us right now in our court cases. And that's okay. That's okay because it's building our case and making our case. And this is the battle. This is the battle right here. Go ahead.
And also, when I've been going to court, the courtroom is pretty packed now, and everybody's been following my case. So, like, when people go to court, and we're building our team, and I'm telling them, you know, tune in and go on the in L.A. And I said, and whenever anyone goes to court, I said, we just let somebody know, so we're there, and we bring our people. I mean, we bring the pads and stuff. So now they're all getting real nervous because they see us there, and it's just like Monday is the day that they really take everybody's property. And yeah. So I said, it's just like, so I said, make sure you have your pen and paper. And you could just sit there and write and see the attorneys are watching, the judge is watching. They're all watching because they're like, well, who are these people? And what happened, because they put everybody in these illegal foreclosures, now everyone is beginning to talk, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're all getting a little antsy there. But as I said, every Monday, and I said, if you can't make it Monday, we'll be here on Tuesday. We go to the different floors and stuff like that. And I said, do not go into the courtroom by yourself. I said, Monday, I always try to make myself available, you know, on Monday. Go there from 9 to 11, 9 to 12. You got a whole new group of people, and you're going to come up with five or six more people. So we're all getting familiar with each other, same case, you know. And,
well, that's the way to do it. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing. Yeah. And
look,
so we've been
building it up. That's why we're moving forward, and that's why they're afraid to deal or do too much to us because we have the numbers. We're out there. We've got name recognition. A lot of people are aware of us, but they kind of don't really understand exactly what we're doing because they're not paying attention close enough, and they think maybe that they have to learn law to understand what we're doing, and maybe that's boring. And believe me, statutory law is extremely boring. It bores me to tears. I sit down sometimes and read this stuff, and I just can't go on. I just can't go on with it. It's too disturbing and boring, and it's meaningless anyway. It has no power, no authority. We didn't give them the power or the authority to write a statute to control our behavior, period. Show me the law. Show me where we, the people, wrote the law to give you that authority, and then we'll talk about it. And we have given them authority. Under Article 1, Section 8, we've given them authority to write statutes, but we were very clear on what those statutes could be written about, where they write the law and necessary statutes and even taxes, the proper and legal taxes, lawful taxes that they can apply, okay? But we're very specific about it. They have gone beyond it. They have ignored the Constitution. And enough already, Mr. President, enough already, anybody else that's up there fighting the good fight, that you're going to go talk to a lawyer. Enough already. If you expect to be ignorant and free, we're going to remain slaves eternally. And if we the people cannot get a foothold back into our courts and take control and bring justice back into our courts, if we can't do it, America will never be free. We will continue to be the slaves that we are to these people, that we've elected in office. Okay, and we keep electing the same people over and over again. Okay, hopefully the change has happened with President Trump. And hopefully, you know, he's going to get more educated because he still needs an education. It's clear to me, anyway, that he needs education. He's got to stop relying on attorneys. You know, we told him in an information a long time ago, ignore that judge up there. Look, you've got the law. The law is clear. Nullify the words of that judge. Nullify what he says. You're the president of the United States. Look, that's the whole thing about the three branches. They have battles. One can't do anything against the other, ultimately. okay, unless they you can show that they're breaking the law. And clearly the president was not breaking the law when he was doing what he was doing, and a judge stepped up and said, you can't do that no more. Hey, tell him to go to hell and move on, and put the order out and fire anyone who doesn't obey it. It's, you know, and this is the guy that would do it, but he didn't have the knowledge, and he didn't have, you know, he's definitely got a backbone, there's no doubt about that, but he didn't have a backbone in that area. He didn't have the confidence to be able to go forward with this, and he's the guy that I believe will do it if we could educate him, and we do have his ear, you know. And hopefully he's still getting our papers, and we do put stickers, at least one sticker, sometimes two, crime to intercept, and we send it to the president, we send it to Jeff Sessions, and we send it to Senator Grassley, and they all get a copy, you know? But, look, we need to do these things, but these things also cost money. Not a lot of money, but it costs money. You know, I'm right now, you know, bills time. It's always, every time you turn around, it's bill time. You know, you finally catch up, and it's time to pay the bills again. And right now, I got one ream of paper left, and I need to buy some papers. And then, you know, toner's super expensive. It's like the $89 to put all the colors in and everything into the one printer. I have a black and white printer, which I use for most things, but certain papers you want to do in color. And so I'm out on that, and that costs money. So look at anybody who could afford to give $5 a month before, if you're not already doing it, please do that. Anybody that's got a deep pocket, maybe you can afford to throw $1,000 here or more there, you know, because you could afford to do that. This is, look in to see what we're doing. This is where you can put your money and know that the work is going to get done, that we're fighting the good battle, and we're doing things, you know, the money's going to where it belongs because, again, who's going to go to court and make a battle that we're going to make for just a couple of $1,000s, which is mostly for paper and toner and mailing and serving, you know? I mean, that's where the hard costs are. But no one's collecting a salary here. No one's getting rich here. We're making the fight. We're making the battle. But we need the tools, and we need the money to get the tools. So, again, to go up against the judiciary, a huge battle to go against the entire federal court system, which is 94 federal district courts, and maybe also the United States Supreme Court for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, we can do it. Okay? Wow. And any place else you would go that would even think to make that kind of a battle, you're looking well into many hundreds of thousands of dollars. Many, probably $1 million, because they'd want an army of lawyers and they did all this stuff. Forget about it. They'd all want a big salary.
We'll have to do a fundraising because it's worth it.
So look, we need to go after the judiciary now. We really, really do.
Okay.
We can't wait no more. So let's everybody think about that. Again, if you're not given anything, $5 a month or more, and for this particular thing, maybe you could throw in an extra $50 here, $100 there for those people who are giving, or even an extra $5, you know, whatever it is you can afford, you know. And we do everything we can so that everybody can have access, you know, to everything we're doing and get an education here. But go ahead.
Well, see, I have to say this, and everybody who's listening, it has been wonderful because this has been going on my five years. And by everything I've learned under NLA, I've been going in the courtroom from the education from you and the others on the line and representing myself. And everybody's like, are you an attorney? No. You know? And as I said, and every time I will sit there and do my notes and listen to the recalls, and I said, oh, my gosh, and somebody will give us different information, just like when I share that life use, you know? Everybody put that on there properly. I have my warranty deed and all. Another thing, too, is whenever you get any bills or whatever in the mail from a debt collector, send it right back. I refuse. Show me the contract. The bill will go away. I'm like, wow.
Well, that's right. That's right. Give a notice and demand.
Yes,
you know?
And that's what I've been telling them. I go, you're kidding. So now I said, you know, it's just like, I start sharing the information. They ask me more questions. I said, go to NLA, and I give it to the students every night. I just came from a board meeting tonight. That's why I was late, you know. And this was the last one. I go to NLA, and the students, I said, good, because quite a few parents were saying, well, can you help get my kid a job or whatever? I said, well, the job thing's scarce. But I said, I'll tell you what, we're going to get these kids under the NLA, and we're going to take them on the little field trips right to the courthouse so they can start writing and learning this stuff. So that's going to be a project. So I got three different groups that they definitely want to take this on board, you know, because everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, any bill.
Yeah, people need to get active locally like you're doing. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing. But please call me tomorrow so we, because there's some other things I want to go
over. Well, I won't be, tomorrow's not a good day.
Wednesday.
Wednesday's good. Look, at Jan will be back tomorrow. Get a hold of Jan. You know, he's usually accessible. And get a hold of him, and he'll find me. And if I'm not available at the moment, once he finds me, you know, I could say, well, look, I'll be back in front of my computer in an hour or whatever the case may be, and we'll go through this. We'll help you with that paper. But,
and check
your
post office box. Okay.
Excuse me?
And check your post office box.
Okay. Appreciate
okay.
that.
All right.
But anyway, you know, we need to step up and do what we got to do. We got to become educated. And again, that's the purpose. One of the purposes, the main purposes of the National Liberty Alliance is to facilitate an education, to facilitate an organization on a grassroots level, an education, communications between the people from one end of the nation to the other. But the key thing is educating. And, you know, we started on this. We got these free courses, of course. And one course is a little difficult because of the way it's set up and questioned. And I think we're going to get this fixed, hopefully. I may have to spend more time with it. Hopefully we'll get it fixed without me having to spend time with it. But our civics course is such an important course. I mean, it is extremely important because it explains how we got to where we were to where we're at today. This is extremely important. And as a matter of fact, I recently found a video. I know I made a note of it. I got to get it posted, maybe even added to this course, because it really brings us to the finale of what this whole thing, where we're at and what's happening to turn it around. And so that civics course is so important. It's a long course. It's 120 hours. It's mostly, you know, almost all audio and video. One of the problems with that course is if you get six or eight questions, and, you know, I didn't create the questions on the course. A lot of people were involved in creating the questions because I didn't have the time. And I told them, look, don't make them hard questions. We just want to make questions so we know that the people, you know, listen to the video and then answer some questions to move on to the next and or the audio, whatever the case may be. And but when we set it up, it was before we had any help from on the inside, so to speak, with a technical individual working with us. You know, we were paying people to do this. And when the course was set up, you know, you go and you answer maybe five questions. And you get one question wrong, well, you have to get them all right to vote. And the problem is you didn't know which ones are right and which ones are wrong. And that, I think, we're going to be able to fix. Hope we can. If not, we can rewrite the questions and go through it and fix it that way. And that'll take a little bit of time. But look, endure the course as best you can. Go forward. We'll do our best to make it a little easier to move through. But it is important to listen and watch all these videos or listen to these audios. And the Constitution course is a really very simple course. It's like, you know, I think it would be Constitution 101 because really it's a very quick course. It's only about 6 to 8 hours long, and anybody could do it over a weekend. But you get at least a sort of an introduction to the Constitution. But the other course we're working on right now, okay, is the Government by Consent course, and we're registering for that. And we want anyone that takes that course to be a supporting member. So we're requiring people to be giving us $5 a month or more to take that particular course. But there are some people that are on maybe a Social Security, very limited income, and $5 they really can't afford, $5 a month. Believe it or not, there are people that are stuck in that kind of a financial situation. And so for those people, you know, if they get a hold of Jan, Jan will flip the switch on you, and so that you don't have to give money. And one day, if you can, you're fine. We want to make sure everybody gets an education here. And $5 a month is not a lot of money. So we're not really, it's not really even being charged for the course. We want to still kind of say it's free, but you've got to be a supporting member. After all, we have to keep the lights on. You know, we have costs every month. Every month we have costs. Got to be paid. And to keep the lights on, keep things going. And we need materials, writing materials. We need paper. We need ink. Sometimes, you know, these two, I got two printers here, still in good shape, still running, but eventually one day they'll break down. We'll have to buy another printer, you know, whatever the case may be, okay? but we need the support. Now, I've been trying to get back to this course for 2 months now, and I thought by now, last month we'd have at least two or three chapters done and people could start moving through that course. We're still kind of behind on that. And of course, we're writing a book, I'm writing a book, and it's kind of going simultaneously with this course, because the book is going to be the course, but the book will be much richer than the course. And I will tell you, my intention is to write this book in such a way not only to inform and instruct and give people a really good understanding of the whole process, the judiciary process, how it works, the common law, what true law is, the difference between the law of man and the law of God. I mean, that says it right there. You know, we want to be under the law of God. But to put all this stuff together and also give form, the forms of the court, the process of the court, you know, the procedures, how things work, and the major forms for people to be able to write and file papers in the court. And I will say, I believe that this book and this course, one or the other, both of them, will be sufficient enough that you should be able to say, I'm a common law lawyer. Now, of course, again, you know, you have to be diligent with it if you want to get to that point and you want to really work on things. And the key things to learn and to retain anything is spending time with something. The more time you spend with something, the more things flow. The easier you get, and then you start to get these, epiphanies. Okay, you're working on this and you're working on that, and two or three or four different ideas come together, and all of a sudden you get an epiphany, and you get an understanding on something that you didn't understand before, on how things work, or what, you know, something deep about the common law, or whatever the case may be, okay? And that's a learning process for anyone. You know, one of my teachers, the most important teacher of my life, which was 30 years a teacher of mine, very early on, one of the things they taught me is read. You know, you do your studying and you do your focus and you do your deep research here and there, but you got to read, and understand what you're reading. And you'll never forget it, okay? And so anybody who approaches this process through the course that we're trying to put together and even more deeper, the book that we're trying to get out there, you'll be able, as long as you can articulate yourself, you'll be able to get into a courtroom and deal with any legal problem you have. And in the courts, most of the process is papers. I mean, most of your communication and back and forth is paper, okay? And usually the case could often run one on paper alone, because paper will show who's going to win, you know? When you look at a paper of any court case that's going on, particularly in equity court, of course, you look at a court case and you read through both sides, it becomes obvious who the winner is, and both sides should know it. And you should be able to move the court often for summary judgment through the fact that they can't defend themselves against whatever it is that you're bringing up against them. But if you can't articulate yourself well, if you have to go in and make the argument, I mean, that's where a lawyer would come in. But you always have to have control of that lawyer. And I hate to say a bar lawyer. We got to get rid of bar lawyers, in my opinion. Matter of fact, I don't think we have a choice because they're statutory. A lot of these lawyers could become common law lawyers very quickly if they just start reading the common law. They already know how the procedures and the process works, so they could do this rather quickly. They just have to turn to the real law, and look for justice. But look at anybody, again, you can get someone to assist you, because that's what the Constitution tells us we have the right to, especially in a criminal case, but not necessarily in an equity case. You'd have to pay someone. But you get the assistance, but you got to control what that person's saying. You're the one, this is your case. You know the case better than anyone else. You know the facts, and that's what any court case is about. It's always about the facts. I will win the case on the facts. I forget who said that. I think it was Lincoln, but I forget who it is in history that said that. I don't care what you got, what, you know, any case, give me the facts and I'll win it on the facts, because that's justice, winning a case on the facts. So anyway, we are putting together, but let me just finish this. We are putting together this particular course and this particular book, and I'm hoping that we can move it through quicker. You know, hopefully we'll get it going soon, because we do have a lot of work here to get going. But once that course comes out, and again, between now and then, people should be taking the civics course. They should be taking the constitutional course. They should be looking under the educational tab and start doing what? Read. We have lectures. We have essays. We have American history lectures. We have common law lectures. We have trial by jury, which is an essay by Lysander Spooner. We have the law. We have U.S. Marshal essay. We have articles with a lot of different essays. People need to read. And even if it's only 20 minutes or a half hour a day, you got to read. You got to come to an understanding. We got a lot of books out here, a lot of information. You know, we got the 5,000-year leap, which gives you a lot of insight on the birth of this country, of this nation, and who we are as a people, and who our founding fathers were. That book, we have an audio, and we have it written. It's free, right on our website. Anybody can go up there and take it. We have all the founding documents up there. We got the Federalist Papers. We got the Federalist Papers. We got the Anti-Federalist Papers. And they should be read, and we've got them in audio. You can put on the audio and kick back and read along with them. You can pause the audio, rewind it, look up the meanings of words. Look it. Education is the key. And I'm telling you, the best way to educate, of course, you know, you want to do your research, you want to do your studying, you want to do your focus things, but read. That's where the richness of any good education comes from. And people need to do this because, again, if President Trump thinks he's going to save this nation and be ignorant, I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell him too. It's not going to happen, okay? It's just not going to happen. And anybody who thinks because President Trump is going to make America great again, and if he succeeds, and I do believe he's going to succeed, we're going to lose it anyway if the people don't get up and take control and stop with the lawyers trying to define what your liberties are, to define what the knowledge of the law is. You need to know yourself, because they don't know it. And they're putting upon you the law of man, which is only bringing you into a statutory prison. And you will never get out of that statutory prison until you come to a knowledge and an understanding of who we are as a people, who our founding fathers were, what the principles we are built upon, who God is, and what the law truly is. The law, ultimately, which is the law of God, the law of nature's God. Look at one more time. Jefferson said it. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never, ever, ever will be. Forget about it. You can't have it. You're not going to have it.
And
all right, back to you.
One other last thing. What I did every since from day one, since I've been going into the court, I always swear in. And as soon as they call my name, I say, I swear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me, Jehovah God and Jesus Christ. And he goes, I don't want to hear all that. And I said, so help me, God. I always swear in. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, how come you swear in? How come they never swear in? So it's the people are beginning to think, because when you see it on TV, everybody's swearing in. But these guys, and when you go into the court, there it's only between the judge and the attorney. And they're all on the same page. And it's just like when you go in there, they're just taking people's homes, and several cases, like the cases we witnessed last week, it was the attorney's fee that they put on these people's property. One guy was worth $18 million. The attorneys ran up these illegal fees like almost $684,000. He says, quick for sale or something like that. Everybody's like, you know, and it was all the attorney fees. And the people just, people are devastated. One woman had almost had a heart attack. They had to call the ambulance. I mean, it's just a nightmare what's happening in these courts.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And
you know?
And again, look, it's because we are ignorant. We deserve everything we get, okay, because we're lazy. We're tweeting and not reading, okay, and writing. I mean, nothing wrong with tweeting. I'm sure, you know, it is a lot of good things come be useful with that, but I think we spend way too much time with it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We tweet about everything, you know, a lot of texting and stuff. You know, I got a dumb phone, and I refuse to get a smartphone. I love my dumb phone.
Same
you know?
Here, yeah.
And you ring it, and I'll answer it, and that's it. I'll take a little texting, and that's it, but I'm not going to respond much in texting at all because, first of all, it's too tiny. And
It's
not what I got, you know. I don't want that smartphone. I got a computer. When I want to get into something online or something, I got my laptop or I got my desktop, and that's that. But look it. You know, people need to get involved. They need to become educated. And you can't be free without an education. You can't allow someone else to control your freedom, your liberty for you. You can't rely on a lawyer. You can't rely on the courts. You can't rely on the president. You can't rely on anyone but you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it. And if you don't do it, then you deserve it. You've got access right here. We got all the tools, everything anybody wants, nationallibertyalliance.org. Everything you need is on that website, and we're going to be putting more on there. And, you know, to keep up to date what's going on in the news, you know, we've got a new tab up here, which we've been up there a couple of months now. It's called Reality Check. And if you haven't been underneath that tab, you need to get under that tab. And we've got a lot of news and stuff under there, under the news tab, too. You know, we just recently put up YouTube News, okay? And we're adding individuals that we feel really give a good report on the news. You know, there's a lot of garbage out there. Even on YouTube, there's a lot of garbage out there and a lot of exaggeration. But people who are really, really focused, giving some good information and giving you the real news, okay, things that you need to know. You know, we're posting those individuals. You can come in, click on, and you can go right to their YouTube page and start listening to their videos and go back through their older ones and keep informed on the newer ones. I'll say it again. It's on our front page. You know, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be, you know. This is a Thomas Jefferson quote. And you know, one of the things Thomas Jefferson spoke about is the fact that the government should be giving us an education. You know, if the people don't understand and they can't, they're not qualified to run their own lives, to take care of their own liberties and understand in courts and so on, then train them, give them the education. And, of course, they're not going to give that to us. So that's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, to give you that education so that you can step up on your own 2 feet and defend yourself and win. Now, it's tough to win in court right now because these people are evil people. They're frauds. They've taken control. They seized control of our courts. They've removed justice, and they've given us their statutes so that they can control us. We need to take those statutes down, get rid of them, and bring justice back into the court. And we need to grow up and realize and understand that without God, you can't have justice. And without the foundation of God, you cannot have justice, for that is where we get our unalienable rights. You want civil rights? You want your what amendment is that they push all the time? I forget what number it was. Oh, 14. You want your civil rights? Go to the 14th Amendment. They talk about that all the time. You go into court, I hear lawyers, that's the only time they talk about the Constitution. They talk about the protection of the 14th Amendment. That's your civil rights. Rights given to you by man, not God. No, I want my unalienable rights. I want my right of due process not through the 14th Amendment. I want my right of due process through the 5th Amendment. That's what I want. And mm-hmm. this is what people need to understand. They need to understand the game. And believe me, law is boring, but not common law. Common law is exciting. History of the United States and who we are as a people and how the United States was put together, it's fascinating, fascinating stuff. So you're not going to be bored there, I promise you. And you'll be empowered by studying these things. But if you're going to defend on a lawyer, if you're going to depend on a lawyer to protect your rights, then you deserve everything you're going to get. Because you're going to get just more shackles. That's what you're going to get. You're going to pay through the nose.
And
that's it.
The funny thing, I'm going to leave you this last thing. That's what everybody was complaining. They go, all of us got attorneys, and we all lost our place. You've been in this courtroom defending yourself, and how come you're still in your house? I said, well, I was learning a lot from MLA. And when I put the attorneys on the spot, I said, I would like a sworn notarized affidavit. When did I take this mortgage out? And the attorney goes, Your Honor. He told the attorney, you don't have to answer her. This is my court.
Yeah. Unbelievable, huh?
Mm-hmm. But that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks.
But swearing when you go into court, too, because all that's in your transcript.
Right. And look, you gotta understand the strategies, and hopefully we'll be able to express that in the course that we're putting together and the book that we're putting together. The basic strategies to win, really. You have to know when you can win and how to win. And again, it's an uphill battle right now because the judge is always on the other side. Because what battles are we fighting? We're fighting against the establishment. The bankers and the mortgage companies, they're all one and the same. We're going up against the elected individuals, the appointed individuals, and they're all protecting each other, and they're all maintaining the status quo. That's what the judge is doing, maintaining the status quo.
But, John, I think what would be really good for everybody to sit there and press all their Congress people and everybody, make them swear a sworn notarized affidavit on their oath and what they're going to say and do. In any law they make, we want a sworn notarized affidavit. See how many will drop out of office
then. What they need to do is show us the law that gives them the ability to write the law. That's what we need to do. It's called the Constitution. Where is the Constitution? Do you have that authority? And you know what? We're only going to get that when we take our nation back. We have to take back our judicial process, bring it right back to the people. These are our courts of justice. It's not theirs. It doesn't belong to that judge. He's a hired help. Okay? These are our courts. Okay? Mm-hmm. Not theirs. That's number one. And number two, we have to take back the political process. And we teach that here on National Liberty Alliance. We just don't talk about much because we can't win back the political process until we win back first the judicial process. But when we win that judicial process, believe me, we're going to go hardcore on showing people and teaching people to take back that political process where you get to decide who goes onto that ticket, whether it be Republican or Democrat or whatever. You decide who gets on there, and you make sure, it's up to you to make sure then that nobody gets onto the ticket unless they know and understand the Constitution. And if they don't know and they don't understand the Constitution, send them the National Liberty Alliance. We'll teach them what it is. And then you go back. Then they can go back to you and you can quiz them. And then you can support them as an individual to run for office and make sure that they understand that we, the people, are not going to tolerate when you break the law. When you go up against the Constitution and you don't live by the Constitution as an elected or appointed individual in office, then we're going to remove you from that office. It is very, very simple for we, the people, to remove these people from office through recall. The committee men, and this is what we're talking about, this is where we get the power and the authority politically, is through the committee man process, okay? We take the committee man process and we apply this towards these people, make sure they do the right thing. When they break their trust with us and they start going in directions, taking some of that funny money, okay, and they come back to our state, you know, we'll get the grand jury. We'll call the administrators up to have the grand jury take a look at them because maybe they need to go to jail for bribery, for being bribed, for taking a bribe. But look at any, the committee men can remove anyone from office within 90 days. There's a percentage. For whatever the election process is and, you know, how many votes that took place, you have to get so many signatures to remove that person to do what's called a recall, okay? And if you can get those signatures, and believe me, the committee men can get those signatures. It's like an army, okay? You get the signatures and you apply it and you do the recall and you run another election to replace that individual. And believe me, a phone call to that person, they understand. Listen, I can tell you, and I know this because I've seen it, because I was a committee man myself, and I see what goes on with the people who have taken control of this. And these people go begging for their jobs through the committee men. They know they're not getting into office without the committee men. They also know that if they're disobedient and don't listen to the committee men, they're not going to support them. But when they understand that we also have the power of recall, believe me, that's a powerful tool. And they will be totally 100% obedient to the committee men that really gave them the power by getting them onto that ticket. And they have the power to remove them off of that ticket. And they have the power to not support them. They have the power to allow them only to have two terms, and then you're out. We don't need a law. We just need committee men that are educated and realize that nobody should be in office longer than two terms, period. End of subject. Okay? You just apply it. You don't put it back on the ticket again. That's how we deal with these people. And that's how we take control. And that's how we have government by consent. Government by consent through the political process, through the committeemen. Government by consent through the judicial process, through the juries, the grand juries, the trial juries, the administration of those juries. That's how we control our nation. Those are the two major ways. And it's not the only way. Remember, the first order of business for consenting to government was our Constitution, and we need to enforce it from the judicial process side and from the committeeman side, the political process side. That's how we do it. All right. Anyway, let me move on with our program tonight. I didn't really expect to be talking as long, but I guess I did. We're going to move over to Brent. I see Brent is still here. So, Brent, are you about ready? You hear, Brent? I think you just muted yourself.
Yeah.
Try it. Yep. There you go. We got you. Hang on 1 second. Gerard, are you ready to take over the board? Gerard from New York. Unmute yourself. Talk to me, Gerard. I must have put him to sleep. All right. Anyway, hopefully he'll wake up soon. All right, let's move over to our rest of our program here. We have Brent Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com, and Brent's going to teach us something tonight, probably continuing on the Declaration. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Take advantage of what I've ever got, whatever I have on that website. There are some things there that are audio. I think there's about 200 audio clips there on the media button at the website, commonlawyer.com. And most of those clips are 6 to 8.5, 8 minutes and 43 seconds. None of them are longer than that because when I loaded them, that's all it allowed me to load. You can take them out like sliced bread. They're in alphabetical order at 2 windows there on the video page, 100 clips in each window. And you can take them out and listen to them. Unlike sliced bread, when you get done, you can put them back. They're consumed. They're there again to listen to. And all sorts of subjects, most of it, relates somehow to law, what law is, what good it is, how you can empower yourself to do it. By the way, one of the best-kept secrets in the courts is the lawyers learn as they go, and just like the doctors learn how to find remedies to the problems of health as they go. And that's why it's called the practice of medicine and the practice of law. Oh, there are things that lawyers know because they've given their time to trying to understand a whole lot. But when you go into court, if you don't understand, it's not to be intimidated by that. Just understand that you're willing to try something. And when it comes to arguments and people disagreeing upon what the law is or how it is to be applied, your point of view could be just as valuable as anybody else's. Just relax and argue your point of view. I was thinking, as John was talking, how refreshing it would be if millions of people would go into court and make one argument. Just write down on a piece of paper, I can't find that where the government has any jurisdiction under our Constitution of the United States or under the state constitution, if it's a state matter, I don't find anywhere that they're given jurisdiction to even bring this kind of an action in court or for the courts to even entertain this kind of an action. And don't need to say anything else. If they don't have jurisdiction, there's no sense making any other arguments. And when you get ruled against, take it up to the next level and say the same thing. Just simply say, I don't see anywhere in the Constitution that governs these courts where the court has jurisdiction over this matter. Because if the Constitution of the United States doesn't give jurisdiction to the federal courts over a particular matter expressly, well, then it doesn't have jurisdiction, regardless of what the government says, regardless of what the courts may say. And the same is true in all courts. Well, we're in the Declaration of 76. My opinions are mine. And I don't try to say they're anybody else's. They may or they may not be. But probably most of what I say in L.A. would agree with. That's been my experience in the past. We're in the Declaration of 76. We're down to the end of it there. I think the last time we met a week ago, I read the last paragraph of the Declaration. But just to refresh your memory about it, I'm going to read it again. The last paragraph, paragraph 32, says this. It says, we, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies solemnly publish and declare that these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. Now in this final paragraph, the signers declare that such dreadful dealings as those our Declaration of 76 recounts above, in the paragraphs above this, demand that the colonies break ties of loyalty from Britain. And their conclusion uses language from Lee's, he was a relative of General Lee, by the way, this Lee I'm talking about here, later to be born, General Lee, I believe, born about 18, I think he was born the same year as Abe Lincoln, 1809. But one of his relatives drafted a piece of writing called Resolution of Independence from Britain. And he was from Virginia, and he was speaking on behalf of Virginia. But just 2 days before, Congress had noticed this resolution and had passed it on the 2nd of July, 1776. And the signers of the resolution pledged loyalty to one another and confessed trust in God alone. Pledged loyalty to one another and confessed trust in God alone. Now, our national motto is not El Pluribus Unum, It is not God Bless America. Our national motto by Act of Congress is on all of our coins, on all of our money or currency, depends on what word you want to use, but on all of it, it says, in God we trust. And our trust is reserved, according to our national motto, our trust is reserved to God alone. No, we're not to trust other men. And like Paul the Apostle said, I don't even trust myself. Why would I trust you, he said to the Corinthians. Well, that's good Bible, and that's good policy. I had a fellow tell me today, he said his dad, he grew up in Friesland. Friesland, he's Frisian. That's over in the Netherlands. And he said his father told him, when he was growing up, he said, don't trust anybody, but be trustworthy. Don't trust anybody, any man, but be trustworthy. That's what God demands of us, that we not trust any man, including ourselves, but we are to strive to be trustworthy, number one. Number two, and our Declaration of 76 makes this point, we are to be loyal to those of like kindred spirit. Trust God. All trust is reserved for God alone. Loyalty is for others in relationships, our spouses, our children, our parents, our friends, our neighbors, and our kin. There are those to whom we owe absolute loyalty. But trust divided is no trust at all. And we reserve trust for our Maker alone. Well, to sum up, America justifies its founding foremost upon our forebears' direct appeal to their personal Creator. The judge of all in heaven and on land, and they've done so by passing every mere government of men and appealing, and I'm quoting, appealing to the supreme judge of all the world for the rectitude of our intentions. In other words, for detection of every wrong intent. We've searched our own souls, they're saying, and we find sincerity in what we're doing, and we appeal to the supreme judge of the world for the rightness, that's what rectitude means, rightness of our intentions. And then they say, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. What is divine providence? It is the provision of God. Divine providence is the provision of God. In short, the signers of our Declaration of 76 cinch our declaration with trust in God and loyalty to each other. Trust in God and loyalty to each other, pledging all God has entrusted to them. Pledging all the property, all the life, all the liberty, all the property to them. Maybe 2 years ago now, I forget, time flies, I was in Boston, Massachusetts. For the first time in my life, I'd never been there. Of course, I'd read a lot about it, heard a lot about it, written a lot about what happened there. And I decided there were some things that I wanted to see. I wanted to see where the Boston Massacre occurred back before the War of Separation with Britain. I wanted to see the old North Church where the lanterns were hung, one by land and two by sea. I wanted to see Bunker Hill and Breed's Hill, where Americans gained their first devastating blow against the British. I wanted to see the graveyard where James Otis was buried. I wanted to see all those places because I had heard about them since I was a little boy. So I went about to see them. I got to the, where I began looking, was the graveyard, which was by the old sail factory, which is a building downtown Boston. And there's the graveyard there, and the graves are piled up. The stones have been messed around. It was a pasture for cattle for a while, then it became a swamp. It wasn't drained. And the tombstones were just set up. They were found and set up, but nobody knows who's buried where. Ben Franklin's mother and father are buried there. I saw their graves. But there was a lady there, a young gal, dressed up like a man. And she was dressed up in the clothes of a man who had lived in colonial days, had on a three-cornered hat. And she had a little microphone with her, but a big boom box she had strapped on her side, and she was explaining who the founders were and other points of supposed history. It wasn't history at all. I had never heard such maligning of dead men in all my life. I've heard people say nasty things about men that couldn't defend themselves, but I'd never heard anything like that. I mean, every one of the founding fathers, she talked about them all, were some of the dirtiest, rottenest, black-hearted scoundrels ever lived, according to her. That's what she said. And she explained in great detail how they were out for themselves. They didn't care about the country. Rich men, especially white men, of course. That's the point of hatred with powers that be at this point. But she went into great detail about that, and I thought to myself what I'd heard a long time ago, that a lion kicked the jackass once. The jackass kicked the lion once. The jackass kicked the lion, but the lion was dead. And I couldn't help myself. I was standing at the fringes around the back of the crowd that was gathered around her, sucking this stuff up like it was candy, like it was going out of style. And I thought this ought to be said, but I didn't say it. I did say something else that wasn't kind, that was loud enough for most there to hear. I don't remember what it was. And I walked away discouraged, and I continued on my journey to go to the Old North Church. And then I went down toward the ocean docks, and I was allowed to go aboard the USS Constitution, the oldest naval warship in commission from the days of the War of 1812. But I left Boston, and I said, I'll never go back there again. It's not what I thought it was, what I'd read about. I went to the Boston Commons, too. And I was deeply disappointed in what I heard and what I saw. And it finally dawned on me, it came home to me. I'm glad I went, because it came home to me in a forceful way, that what they did way back then, as noble as it may have been, and it was noble, they put their signatures on this piece of paper called the Declaration of 76, and by doing so, ensured their outlawry at common law. They were going to follow that doctrine. They were going to make them outlaws, and they did. Of course, they were hunted down like animals, and their homes were burned. Their fortunes were stolen. Some of them died in utter poverty. Some of them were very wealthy. Most of them were pretty wealthy, as a matter of fact. They lost everything they had. Some of them lost their families. Well, they were targets of the ugliest hatred, just like some men are today, thrown in jail without cause. Their families are destroyed. But even then, it was even worse for them. I said, I'll never go back there again. I have no desire to. It's an ugly place to be. The things are there, you can see, but you can see that the people that are there are just the opposite. And by and large, it's controlled by forces that are contrary to all those fundamental principles. And it's up to us now to move on and to say these first principles they founded our country upon are important. And for whatever faults they may have had, they're all sinners, just like you and I. But God used them to do important things. And he'll do the same thing with you if you give yourself to understanding truth. And that's what he wants. And it's the individual that makes the difference. If it isn't the individual that makes the difference, as was true back then, these men were individuals. They thought for themselves. They saw where they agreed, and they joined their resources. They pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. and they decided upon a plan to ensure freedom, and freedom is inextricably bound to property. And if there are no men that are doing well financially, nobody's going to do well financially. It's important that men do well financially. How do you do that? Well, if you have a common law tradition that's observed, it can happen. It does happen. And it will happen more the more the common law tradition is observed, because our common law tradition is about property, personal property, not government property. There's always property. Depends on who controls it. Well, the founders, in this document, the Declaration of 76, made a solemn appeal, and the reliance that they declared was a personal matter, an individual matter, being an act of faith. An act of faith, I'm quoting from the Declaration of 76, an act of faith in firm reliance upon divine providence, as opposed to relying on self-justifying morality. Let me repeat that one. These men that signed this document declared that their reliance was firm upon divine providence, as opposed to relying on self-justifying morality. In fact, there is no evidence that our Declaration of 76's formal respects paid to God are insincere window dressing, which would make the signers of our Declaration of 76 mockers of God. If they weren't sincere in their signatures on this document and what this document says, these men, every one of them, were mockers of God. I don't find evidence of that in this document, and I don't find evidence of that in the lives of those that signed the document. Our Declaration of 76 references our Maker, our Lawgiver, the God of all creation, five times. Our Declaration of 76 calls Him our Creator, our Supreme Lawmaker, the source of all our rights. I'm quoting, these are all quotes. It calls Him the world's Supreme Judge, and it calls Him our Protector. If you don't take God, your Maker, as your Protector, you'll be under the protection of some mere mortal who will dominate you. Period. No exceptions. Make your choice. That's what these fellows did. They made their choice. They said, we want to declare that our Protector is our Maker, not the King of England. I read recently about the first Norman King of England. His name was Rolla. They said Rolla was such a big man that he never rode a horse. Horses didn't do well under him. He was just big. Not only was he a big guy upwards, he was a big guy outwards, the way I understand it. But when he landed in France, what is today called Normandy, he finally cut a deal with the French king because he was powerful. He had a lot of men with him, and the French king said, okay, I'll let you be king over there in Normandy, but you have to swear loyalty to me. And in France at that time, they were Romanist, and so they did like the Pope. The kings demanded that men kiss their feet when they swore loyalty. And Rolla said, I'm not going to lick any man's boots. So this fellow kept insisting that if he was going to keep his end of the deal, he had to swear loyalty. And the way they did that was in Romanesque style. The head man holds out his toe, and you got to take it and kiss it. So he sent one of his servants with instructions of what to do. And when the king of France held out his toe, as the Pope does down in Rome, he took his foot in his hand and he gave him a flip, as we used to say, A over H. And that's, or H over A, which is head over ankle, or head over something else, but it means you turn him upside down. That's what he did to him. Well, that's the attitude we need to have, not that we need to be hurting anybody physically that way. But when it comes down to it, and we have to decide who our Protector is, and who we're going to swear loyalty to on terms that he protect us, let's just make it our maker and forget all these other people. And Bill Clinton said once, I remember him saying this, he said, the American people elected me to take care of them. I really believe he believed that. I wouldn't trust him to even get near any females in my family, much less protect them, or me, for crying out loud. And by the way, that's the way all powerful men are. What do I mean? I mean, they're just men, like you and me. And if they're given power, they're more dangerous, not less. That's what power exacerbates in men, is danger. Power corrupts. Well, that's not necessarily true. Men are already corrupt. The problem is when they get power, it excites the corruption that's already in them. And that's what Paul the Apostle tells us to beat down, get ourselves under control. Well, to dismiss our Declaration of 76's reference to God as a mere formality and thus impersonal is not only historical silliness, but ignores the personal character of such formalities. Bottom line, men pay formal respect to those they hold in high personal regard and from whom they seek personal favor. The signers of our Declaration of 76 made an avowal of trust, and it shows our declaration to be more of dependence than of independence. Our Declaration of 76 is not of independence. Matter of fact, it never calls itself that. That's what we call it. It's not what it says it is. And it is clearly a declaration of shifting dependence, shifting from the crown of Britain to the maker of heaven and earth for dependence. And it declares our separation from Britain, ending our reliance upon Britain, upon the crown of Britain for protection. But we never boast in our ability to protect ourselves. If we do, we're not being American. We're not being in the spirit of being American. Because our Declaration of 76, our founding document, our organic law, that's what our founding documents are, confess, quoting again from the Declaration, firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. And by using the name Divine Providence, the signers reveal more of the God of whom they speak in paragraph 1 and upon whom they now lean and appeal. Then, as yet today, to acknowledge Divine Providence is to trust in the Creator for provision. He is provider. That's what Divine Providence means. Scripture calls nature's God Providence, because he will provide all your need. That's a quote from the Bible, Philippians chapter 4, verse 19. He will provide all your need. And the signers of the Declaration declared their reliance on him for their need in battle. What was their need in battle? Arms, ammunition, food, provision of clothing. They didn't have much. Read the accounts. They were, many of them, barefoot, even in the wintertime, and you could trace them as they walked over the frozen ground by the blood that flowed out of the bottoms of their feet. But God still provided what they needed. Didn't provide all their luxuries, that's true. But look what happened. Look at us sitting here today. People say it's bad here. Well, we got problems and it's getting worse. But it's still, we're still enjoying the offfalls of the blessings that accrued from our separation from Britain. Listen, we had been relegated to the position and the status of the empire. We were under the imperial command of the King of Great Britain. The common law said Parliament and the King did not apply in the American colonies. That's why we went to war. We wanted to enjoy our birthright. What is our birthright? Well, the same birthright of every member of Adam's race. Very few get to enjoy it. And that's what we today call our common law. It's gone under many different names through the centuries. Finally, God outfits his people for his purpose, and the British Americans, he outfitted them for war in defense of life and freedom. So finally, the words of our declaration, it says, these free and independent states have full power to establish commerce. Well, that revealed the purpose for our Constitution of the United States Commerce Clause. Not to hamper commerce, but to establish commerce. Thus does our Commerce Clause of our Constitution demand that commerce, interstate commerce, be regular. That means unimpeded. That means constant, steady, and expresses no jurisdiction for criminal penalties and enforcement of the rules according to the Commerce Clause. But yet that's what's happened today. And then it says this at the very end, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Now this sentence, this last sentence of our Declaration of 76, reveals that the signers, the subscribers, common object of trust is God, upon whom they base their power of contracting together. The right of contract, the responsibility of contract, of making agreements, is a fundamental right given from the Creator himself, the true lawgiver, not just anybody somebody calls God. But let's put it firm, because this is what they had in mind. They're not talking here about Allah. They're talking about the God of what we call the Bible. The God, as the Bible says, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That God. Their God. The God of Israel, of the Old Testament. That God. Manifest to men in the person of Jesus Christ. How do I know? Well, you get down here at the bottom where they sign and they talk about the year of our Lord. Now, unlike our Constitution signatures, witnessing that the delegates did indeed ratify our Constitution, our Declaration signatures, evidence of the signers' reliance on God and loyalty to one another. That's what this is, evidence. They give evidence of it by signing this document. Thus, on the 18th of January, 1777, Congress ordered the foregoing signatures to this document, subscribed, ordered them printed and authenticated in order to hearten trust in God and loyalty to like kindred spirits. So it was ordered printed, and it's been printed in the form we now have it ever since, but now it's always added to our Constitution of the United States. And we have Georgia. I always noticed this right after John Hancock, even when I was a teenager. One of the signers of the Declaration of 76 is a fellow by the name of Button Gwinnett. I have known one or two people in my life named Button, but it's not something that comes up real often. And some other unusual names we see here, frankly, interestingly, Button Gwinnett being one of them, of course. Looking down through here just quickly, I thought I might see somebody I'd want to make a comment about. Well, I can leave that till later, I suppose. Well, our Declaration of 76 is the whetstone of our Constitution of the United States. The whetstone. Whetstone, and taken together our Declaration and our Constitution follow the course of the common law. In what way? Well, our Declaration delivers the facts of the case, and our Constitution, following the Declaration, has the applicable standards of law, of procedure. Our Constitution is the law of the land. That phrase, law of the land, means due process, not what is to be done as much as how it is to be done. Oh, our Constitution tells us what is to be done, but it stresses, and this is our common law, how, the course that is to be followed when you do it. And the Declaration's facts aroused in principle the applicable law. The Creator's self-evident truths, it says, coupled with King George's and his cronies' wrongdoings, quickened, all this came together to quicken the colonists to demand their common law. to the point they were willing to enforce it by force if need be. And the colonists, their Declaration of 76 renders into words for, to use these words, a candid world. That was at the beginning of our declaration, a candid world. Such facts then being sharpened by battle at that very moment, the smell of gunpowder was hanging in their noses. They were in the throes of struggle when the Declaration of 76 was signed. And simply put, Britain's treading upon the colonists' common law rights of self-government was not only real, but pressing, as each signer took the quill in hand to sign. Our declaration's facts, in addition, are your whetstone for sharpening our Constitution's law against its targets. It was said a while ago that facts are the important thing. That's true. Our common law is a law decided on facts. Facts. What are the facts? The jury decides on evidence. But it is the facts that are the driving force of our common law, not some statute. The targets of our Constitution of 76 are abusers of government power. And such a class of bureaucrats, bureaucratic-minded men, never fears dull discussion of our Constitution, divorced from the facts of our Declaration of 76. You've got to ask yourself, why is it that our Constitution is talked about a lot and our Declaration of 76 doesn't get the same attention? That's because the ones abusing government power have a vested interest in keeping the Declaration of 76 ignored. And our discussions about the Constitution of the United States without the Declaration of 76 are dispirited bones, dry. And our Declaration of 76 breathes life into these dry and dispirited bones. Our common law is about facts. Without facts, our common law doesn't exist. There must be, as our Constitution says, to get into court even, you got to have a real case in controversy. Not some hypothetical idea looking for an opinion. No, you've got to have people involved in locked in combat, the parties to the case, who stand to lose life, liberty, or property, or a combination of those three, because that's all you've got in this life, is life, liberty, and property, and nothing else. But if you wet your words about our Constitution's limits for government on our Declaration's facts of history, and you will strike sparks of fear in today's abusers of government power. And for this reason, our common law, unlike the law of the city, stresses facts. Knowledge of facts among a people keeps freedom. I'll say it again. It's good. Knowledge of facts among a people keeps freedom. Now let me. He who never quotes is never quoted. I'm about done here. Hang on. I'm going to give you a quote from John Adams, one of those early firebrands in our country. He says this of the people of the United States: their great Creator, who does nothing in vain, has given them understanding and the desire to know. They have, speaking of the Americans, he says, they have an indisputable, unalienable, divine right to that most dreaded and envied knowledge. Whoa! You got a divine right to the most dreaded and envied knowledge. And what is that dreaded and envied knowledge that you have a divine right to as an American from your Creator? Here it is: the character and conduct of their rulers, he says. And John Adams continues, the public cannot be too curious concerning the characters of public men. What did they say in the days of Bill Clinton when he was stripping down naked in the Oval Office and having orgies? What did they say, those folks say, in his defense? They said his character has nothing to do with his politics and his political position and the job he's doing. His character has nothing to do with it. Well, I beg to differ, and so does John Adams. Show me a scoundrel in character, and I'll show you a man you don't want in office. Show me a man who likes to seduce young girls, other men's daughters, because of his position. John Kennedy, Bill Clinton, probably others I don't know about. That's all they live to do. Is it any wonder that things happen that happen? You make men mad when you do that. You make yourself vulnerable. Their personal character is important, says John Adams, and they don't want you to really know about it. And that's what they fear more than anything. What are they really doing? What abuses of people are they committing because of their positions of power, what they can get away with? Our Declaration gave to the people that most dreaded knowledge of the tyrannical conduct and character of their rulers. You go to the Declaration of 76, which we have now done, and we see that is cataloged there, the evils of the evil empire. And it was much worse, but it was pretty bad. We're talking about murder, plunder, rape, and pillage. That's what it says to sum up. They didn't want to hear that. Don't talk ugly about us. But these facts sharpen. Facts, you see, sharpen. Not the law. The facts is what sharpens the wits. And it sharpened their wits to give to you and me our Constitution so that you and me, upon getting such dreaded knowledge, will also limit abusers of power. Look about you and know that the abuses of those in power are like those of King George and his cronies. Now, holding this most dreaded kind of knowledge, as John Adams puts it, knowledge of our ruler's character, it will sharpen your wits to our Constitution, and it will stir you to act. You got to get that knowledge in your conscience, in your gathered knowledge. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. Thank you, Gerard. Thank you, John. And I'm back to you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, we'll move over to an open forum if anybody's got a question or a comment. Star 6 to get into the queue. And I think it'll ask you to stay to hit star 1 or something. But anyway, star 6 to get into the queue. Gerard, are you here, by the way? Did you wake up yet? I guess he's still sleeping. All right, we do have a couple of callers in the queue, but only two. So if anybody's got a question or a comment, now's the time to get in. Okay, we'll take our first caller. Will, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Yeah, you got me, John?
Yeah, how you doing, Will?
Good. Yeah, I'd like to compliment Crystal on all the effort she's putting in the court system and working with people. We all need to get involved in our communities, and she seems to be very active in it, so I want to compliment her on that. Also, I'd like to report that we now have the Ron Fleck has the new foundational study up. I would encourage Crystal to stir people in that direction. It gives them the basic knowledge, very simple stuff that get their feet under them, and then guide them into the courses and other areas of the site that have very important information on it. So that is up, and calls are now being made. We just started with the calls. There's 9 people at this point calling. And we've had some reports back on it, and it's been very positive. So I think that's a great place to send new people, and I think they'll get a good basic education and get their feet under them a little bit. So they're ready for the rest of the information that you have available on the site. As you mentioned earlier, all the tools needed are on the site, and as a result, there's a lot of information on that site. So we've kind of simplified it and brought it back to something very manageable for new people. And I'd also encourage people who have been around a while to go through that if it doesn't, some of those videos don't excite them, they're probably dead wood. But in any case, I think it's also a very good place for like college students and so on to get started, to develop the interest in going further and learning more. As you mentioned, common law is exciting, and once you start getting into it and understanding your history and your heritage and the founders, what they felt, which is typically contrary to what you hear today on the news, if you listen to the news anymore. So I think we'll have a better report next week as we get the results of the calls, but we have had results of some people we've steered there, and several said, you know, if you just watch that one video, you know, if that doesn't get you excited, nothing will. And so I would encourage everyone to go to that. It's under the member tab. Go down to the welcome committee and go to the foundational study, which is on the flyout there. There's six parts, a lot of videos, and like I say, it's exciting. I've been around a while, and just going through it myself, I got excited. So I think it's in pretty good state of form right now. There'll probably be some changes, maybe some additions down the road. But it's a very good place for new people, college-type people, even people that get involved. We're finding the new people that come in, we're encouraging their children to also take it. And so I wanted to give a report on that. I would also like to make some comments that I think it was a guy from New Jersey made. The headlines today, you know, congressmen are reporting we're in a civil war. Many people are coming out and saying, you better vote and you better be armed. So we're in, you know, when a rat's cornered, and that's what they are right now. They're throwing everything at us they can, and I understand, I don't know this to be true for sure, that there's been some suitcase bombs that are being placed, and of course we've got the 4th of July coming up, so I'm not saying these are all facts, I'm just saying people really need to be aware of their surroundings between now and at least the 4th of July. Because they're on their downstroke and they understand it. And you've got congresswomen like that gal out in California coming out and saying, you know, get a crowd. If you see a congressman or a Trump supporter essentially in a restaurant or a clothing store or wherever it might be, get a crowd up and raise heck. And you know what that leads to. So it's a time I think everyone needs to be cautious. Things are pretty well under control, but you can't control everything. So I think it's a heads-up time. And I guess that's all I have, John.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it. All right. Again, we don't have many. Well, we only got one other person in the queue right now, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. Into the queue. And before we take our next caller, just a note, I know I mentioned this, but I want to get a little more detail. Under our news tab, people click on YouTube News, okay? And we'll probably, I think there's one or two more individuals that I'm going to add up here, but as time goes on, we might add others. But if you're really looking to get some good news and what's going on, just click on that tab, and each one of these individuals really, you know, when you click on their picture or their name, like You Are Free TV or the White House, which has everything, whatever Trump's doing, you know, on that page, you know, you get all his speeches, all of his, you know, he reports to the people once a week. He's got a weekly call. It's only a couple of minutes long. you know, any meetings he's got. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. What do they call it? The White House briefing, you know, with Sarah. Under that one tab, White House, you have everything. And so you can keep up to date by coming out to this tab and just following through these particular individuals that post this stuff. The White House tab, I think, is done by the White House themselves. As a matter of fact, I know it is. But You Are Free TV, we've been on You Are Free TV a couple of times now. We have a new TV interview that should be probably be released this week, maybe tomorrow. We did the interview last week. So should be coming out this week. But we've been on there a couple of times, and every time we go on that particular program, we do get a lot of new membership. So we're thankful for them, those people up there, you know, bringing us on and allowing us some time. But there's other, you know, programs, I mean, or shall I say individuals on YouTube that, again, give us some really good information. We have SGT Report, Screen Hoopla, Cuniverse, X22 Report, David Zublik channel, and I think that's all we have right now. If we find anybody else that we think is pretty solid, gives a good report, consistent, no BS, no exaggeration, and so on and so forth, so, you know, we'll post them up here. Of course, we don't want to post too many. But again, if you check this page every day and kind of just click on these links one at a time, another page will open up and you can see the latest video that that individual may or may not have out at that time. Some of these people put something out every day. Some of them maybe once every couple of days. But definitely will keep you informed on what's going on. And, of course, the White House tab is really the most important one, in my opinion, because to watch these speeches that Trump gives and, you know, watch the weekly, report he gives to the people, a couple of minutes, and the White House press conference call. I mean, all of those things are really good. So, anyway, that's under news, nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight news and click on YouTube news and you'll get that information. Of course, you can put these things into your subscription. But I noticed that in a lot of my, I got so many things coming into my subscription. Sometimes it's hard to keep track and find all these individuals and make sure that I've watched all of the latest stuff because, again, these people are very, very, very informative. Okay, let's get back to our call here. Let's see, hold on a minute. Hit the wrong button. All right. Take our next caller, Felicia from Florida. We have a couple more people in the queue. Again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. Gerard, if you're here, let me know. But we'll take Felicia from Florida. Go right ahead, Felicia.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys tonight?
Good, thank you.
I have three questions. I would like to ask them first and like you just tell me what you think. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. The first question is, what do you think about President Trump not giving the immigrant due process of law? I know they're not officially American citizens, but what do you think about him skipping the court system and not giving the immigrants due process? The second question is, what do you think about, I know about the outsourcing of jobs and, infrastructures closing in the United States, and the outsourcing of other jobs, you know, jobs and companies. Now we have Harley-Davidson is fighting against Trump and going across seas because they want to escape these new taxes. And the third question is for Mr. Brent. I think I heard something where America lost the Revolutionary War and actually played the British off, and that's why we're in debt to the British. And that's why we have a Federal Reserve and IRS in it.
Okay. Well, I'll start with the first one. And Trump with no due process for those people coming over the border. Hey, look, it is clear if people are coming over, you know, the border and they're doing it illegally and they're caught in the act, I mean, unless they have something to say that would require or that would be important. For instance, if they're looking for a asylum or something, first question I would ask is, and especially if they're coming over with children, is why are they doing this illegally once you go to a point of entry, as Sarah talks about often. So anybody coming in that way should be going to a port of entry if they're seeking protection, asylum. And as long as they qualify for that process, then the next step would be, whatever the legal process goes on there. And I presume at some point that going through that process, you then would go to see a judge. Now, if people crossing the border illegally, and they do say that they're here for asylum, then I would imagine at that point there'd be some kind of a questioning or a hearing or some kind of a quiz of questions to see if they qualify for what they're asking for. And if they don't qualify, then, back to their country. Now, as far as anybody else being caught, what are you doing here? Well, we just want to come in and get on your welfare and bring drugs in or whatever it is that they're coming in. So, of course, they're not going to say those things. But if they have no good reason for coming through, then just send them back. And that's the process. That might take 2 or 3 days. I don't know what the procedure is, but, it might take a week. They may have to be detained and then sent back one way or another. I think it should be done as soon as possible. So I don't see that due process a requirement there, unless they were to say something that would make them to need to go see a judge. I mean, why would they want to go into our court and ask for anything or try to make some kind of an argument or whatever in a court of law has nothing to do with what's going on. So. What'd you say?
They're making due process for them an issue right now. That's why I asked.
Well, yeah, there is no need of due process because even though it's a crime. Yeah, yeah, exactly. We need it first. But look, even the fact that it's a crime on one thing, but we're not punishing these people. We're sending them back, and that's what needs to be done. Due process doesn't even come to play here, so I don't see it. But again, Trump makes it clear, and I know Sarah at the press conferences, the White House press conference, constantly makes it clear, get the wall up, stop these people from coming in, let them come through the points of entry if they want to come in for some kind of protection or something, then come in that way, tell your story, and if it fits the criteria, then whatever steps take place, takes place. Look at anybody who has children who takes this chance to come to the border, because I understand, it could be pretty dangerous. A lot of wilderness here or there or whatever, a lot of people that are being killed or mugged or whatever. Maybe they pay someone money to come across the border and then they end up getting killed. They take the money and whatever it's going on. I don't know. I'm sure there's all kinds of things going on. But the point is why would anyone come that way with their children and looking for asylum? It would be much safer to go to a point of entry. And they would be heard because, that's the process. They will be heard. And they're putting their children in danger. Of course, we'll call it the left, I guess. They're making a big to-do about anything they can, and this is their issue. And no matter what Trump does, they come up with another thing. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I think at some point we should just ignore them. I think we've answered that question. Move on to the next question. They ask the question again. We've already answered that question. And matter of fact, put it in writing and say, look, you get it in writing. We're just not going to deal with it anymore. When Jefferson was president, there was all manner of evil set against this guy. I mean, you would think he was the devil himself. They hated this man. These are the haters of liberty, the haters of America, the haters of the Constitution and what we were trying to do. But nevertheless, Jefferson never gave them the platform to make an argument. He just ignored them. Let them say all the evil things. I don't care. It's not true. It doesn't mean anything. And that's the best thing. Why give them the platform to make the argument, to make their lies and give it any credibility? Anyway, that's that for going back to the due process. As far as Harley Davidson, I think that's a political thing. Look, they're pretty stupid to think what they're doing, because what Trump is doing, it's going to straighten itself out. Let them go spend their money and start sending, you know, trying to set up shop in another nation or whatever, another country, because they want to sell their bikes there. by the time they get up there and send all their money, you know, these issues will be resolved. There'll be no more tariffs or whatever it's called. I forget what it's called, but I think it's a tariff. There'll be no tariffs or anything on, you know, because Trump is really trying to get it. Why should any country put anything special tax on anything that another nation has going in? If they're going to do it to us, we'll do it to them. Drop yours, we'll drop ours. And that's where Trump is really heading to. And I think we're going to get there. You know, it's called free trade. It's real free trade. And
but a lot of Trump stuff is made in other countries and sold in the U.S.
Well, that's true. Well, that's true. And but the thing is, though, you know, Harley Davidson trying to do whatever they're doing, the whole thing's going to disappear anyway, so they're going to waste their money. And I'm not sure exactly what they're trying to do, because, you know, if they're selling their you know, product here, from here, to be shipped there, you know, the tariff is not on things going out, it's on things coming in. Now, of course, they're selling things going out, and if that other nation is putting a tariff or whatever it's putting on it, then of course they get hit with that. And if they're saying, well, you know, we're trying to sell in a particular market that we have going, and because we're hitting them with a tariff that we're going to, you know, that the other nation is hitting us with a tariff and we can't sell our vehicles, well, again, this is all going to go away soon, I think. It'll wind down, and eventually we will get the free trade, because they will break before we will, no doubt about that. And that'll be that. So I think it's silly, and I think it's just a political game. Whoever it is that owns that company is just making, you know, a political statement by saying or doing whatever it is that they're trying to say concerning, you know, the moving their company wherever they want to do. I'd like to respond just real quick about this this other thing of what was it? What was it? The third one on the law
that before we really. Before we get to that one, isn't that the same as us drilling oil here in America, especially up close to Florida, and we have people like GP, which is not even from here, and then we send it over to the refineries across seas, and it's shipped back to us, and we're paying almost $3 or $4 in gas. Isn't that
right, the
same?
Well, to some degree, I guess. Well, look, at first of all, again, this is what we need to get rid of, number one. The other thing, as far as choosing oil, we shouldn't even be using that as an energy. There's plenty of other energies they've got, and a lot of it hidden that they don't want to share with us. But that's another story. But yeah, look, at what Trump is trying to do is really, you know, get the markets back open to free trade, real free trade. And that's an important thing. And if they're going to hit us up with a tariff on anything we send into that country, well, we should hit them back. And believe me, they will break before we will. You know, you take a nation like China particularly, shame on China. Shame on China. When I was a kid, I remember, you know, China did nothing. They didn't have anything. They were completely, so just extremely poor, poor nation. I mean, you know, they'd make these little umbrellas with the, what do you call it, the big little things, just little tiny things that they would try to make money on. And, of course, you know, they had sweatshops going and they were selling here or there. And America gave them everything, really. We really brought them up to a place where they became a competitor against us. And yet, you know, they do not do fair trade. And they steal a lot of stuff. And so shame on them. But look, at what Trump's doing, I think eventually is going to work out, and I think it's going to work out a lot sooner than later. And any nation, any company that makes a move to do something here or there, like Harley Davidson, they're going to end up hurting themselves, because when everything falls away and we do get fair trade, just open trade with the free markets, they'll find themselves trying to move back to wherever they were moving to. And again, I'm not even sure where they're at. is I presume that maybe they're over. You know, that I'm kind of confused with Harley Davidson, because where are they? Are they in some other nation that we're hitting with a tariff and trying to sell back here? Do they want to come back here? And that doesn't sound like what they want to do. So I don't even know, to be honest, on what their deal is on that. But as far as what was the last one? What was that one?
The Revolutionary War.
That we had lost the Revolutionary War.
And then we actually paid the British off, and we became in debt to them. That's why we had a Federal Reserve System and the IRS and all the other stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, to some degree, that is true, because, you know, they kind of have won in a sense. They didn't really win back then, but they already had their spies. They had their influence inside this nation already. And they were moving, of course, they were the pressure and the moving behind the foreign bank, which really they call a national bank or something, you know, which is the Federal Reserve, owned by foreign bankers. They already had that moving, you know, a plan on moving that here. And eventually, you know, we remember Jackson killed the bank, and then it came back again in, was it 1913, I think it was. With the Federal Reserve Act and so on and so forth. And to a degree, they kind of have won, because they've got all their lawyers over here. I mean, we're in statutory prison. They've got, of course, the Federal Reserve. They've got control of the banks. You know, it's really run by foreign bankers. From that standpoint, yeah, they kind of have won. You know, Jackson really did them good damage, and again, they got past that. And Kennedy was the next one, and then they killed him. And here we are with Trump, and I believe Trump's going to finalize this whole thing, and it's going to end. But we'll see what happens as time goes. Brent, do you want to comment on this? Any of these questions? I'm not sure if Brent's still here. He's still here. He may not be listening.
No, I was listening. I was talking, too, but I had the mute on, so you didn't hear anything.
You were talking to yourself.
Yeah, that's right. But, this thing about who controls the country and the British, and the Bank of London was founded in the 1690s. It is the equivalent of the Federal Reserve Bank in America. Of course, took over the country. Its trading arm was the Dutch East India Company, which was used to control the colonies before the Revolution. The Dutch East India Company was powerful and demanded monopoly of trade with the American colonies. And then when America went to war over, really that question reduced us to a mere part of the British Empire, and demanded that we trade only with the British East India Company, which is the trading arm of the Bank of London. All that happened. Then we went to war, and we separated ourselves from all those things. But even in those times, there were agents from the Bank of London working feverishly inside the powers of the government of the new United States, working in the Constitutional Convention. It seems pretty clear now that Alexander Hamilton was an agent of the Bank of London, and that all stands to reason, considering his origins down in the island of Nevis. We don't know who his father was exactly. People in his day called him the bastard son of a Scottish merchant. But nobody really knew who he was. Nobody really knew. They just knew that he was from an illegitimate birth, kind of like Obama. You know, people would talk about Hamilton. Who is this guy? And it became apparent, the evidence seems obvious, that he was there. He was the first treasurer of the United States. He was the advocate of the Bank of the United States, or equivalent to the Bank of the United States. Well, Jackson killed it, had a short-lived life under a charter that was for a fixed period of time. Jackson was president of the United States when the renewal of the charter for the National Bank came up. He said, no, I'm not going to renew it. And the words that he used against the bankers in America were the kinds of words that Jesus Christ used against the practicers of Judaism in his own day, the leaders of the Pharisees. He called them snakes and vipers and vermin. That's what Jackson used those kind of words, and he said, "I'm not going to. They're destroying us." Well, that knocked them flatter than a flitter. And then they did all they could to get the states to go to war with each other and slaughter each other like animals. 600,000 slaughtered Americans of foolishness. And then things are worse afterwards. The bank had more power. The bankers had more power. They kept trying. They got the income tax in place during the American war between the northern and the southern tiers of the states. So they said, oh, it's only for the duration of war. Just like they said in World War II, oh, withholding taxes are only for the duration of the war. Well, lo and behold, the war was over and we still have them. So the banks have worked feverishly ever since the beginning to get their tentacles around our country. And it is in conjunction with the Bank of London, all the same vermin, all the same, as Jackson put it, all the same people, all the same hype, all this baloney about a national debt. We don't have any national debt. Doesn't mean anything.
Oh, yeah,
if you just did away with it all, and there might be some bumps in the road, we'd just keep going. It's all a lie. It's all a hype. Keep us worked up against them, but behind the scenes, not worked up against the idea of a national debt. Behind the scenes, they're just doing all they can to distract, get us off on things like the national debt. It's meaningless. I don't have any debt to anybody. You say, well, the country does. Well, who do we owe this money to? I've heard all sorts of theories. The most popular theory is that it's the bonds that we've sold to other countries, to this country. If we went belly up on China, what difference would it make? If we went belly up on anybody, what difference would it make? Would it change my condition here? Well, maybe for a while, but we need to have the attitude, like this man in the steel business told me recently. He says, people talk about the economy. I don't care. He said, no matter whether the economy is up or down, I still got to make it, and I'm going to. And I'm going to keep working and taking care of my business. And believe me, if things get worse, there will be plenty of men just trying to make money and keep their business going. And that's what keeps – it is the selfishness of men, the self-interest, of, as Adam Smith used to put it, that keeps us all going. And no matter what happens, as long as we have that self-interest in ourselves – he called it the invisible hand of God, then prospers everyone. It's true. That's what drives us. People are like, oh, people are greedy. Well, no kidding. Why don't you state something obvious? Of course people are greedy. The question is, how can we use the greed of men to the advantage of our country? That's what James Madison said. He said our common law tradition is based upon the idea that men are greedy, power-hungry people. And we used our common law tradition, our form of government, to pit men's ambitions against one another so that they will be limited in what they can do. That's what the free market's all about. Not only does it limit one man from the other, by the other. We limit each other. But at the same time, we drive hard and we're prosperous. Our explosive energy can be given vent. And it's there. Let's get real about reality and who we are. And this whole thing about the banks, no, we don't want the banks controlling things. We want to get rid of the vermin, as Jackson put it. And he did everything he could to do it. They tried to kill him. An attempted assassination. Almost, it wasn't miraculous. It was a natural occurrence, but it was unusual that it happened. The man that fired the pistols, both of them, Jackson, point-blank range, they both misfired. Flintlock pistols.
That's an amazing story, yeah?
Yeah, it's an amazing story. But there is a God. He's not just a God. He's the God. And he's in charge. And, well, that's just a few comments about it. And it's our task today to do like Jackson. Just keep saying, no, the vermin are always going to be there. Always. And because we get lazy and we want to deny reality, we want to deny the sinfulness of man, we want to deny the evil of the world, and we don't want to follow God's directions, and then we get into these messes. And then we start whining and moaning and crying, and we were foolish enough to believe all the naysayers. I can't remember a time that the economy wasn't bad. Can't remember a time. Even when it was good, it was still bad. I grew up in a place where people farmed, and people say, there's never a time when farmers aren't complaining. You grow up with it. You get used to it. And even when things are all right, when things are really good, they just don't say much anything. That's the way it works.
Farmers are complaining now, Mr. Brent.
What's that?
Farmers are complaining now because the so-called illegal immigrants are being shipped back off, and they don't, the local farmers in the United States don't have people that's going to do those jobs, so they're eventually going to close up.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to have everything shipped from China, and I'm not trying to have that.
No.
Yeah, I think things are going to work out a lot better than that. Look, bear in mind, most of our farms have been taken over by big corporations. You know, that's one problem, and we need to. They've stolen the farms from the regular guy that got his piece of land and planting food and making a living. But as far as a bankruptcy or anything of that nature, look at. We have a man in the White House that understands the problem. And if you really are careful looking into what's going on economically and see what he's doing and how he's really setting the stage so it will be a soft landing. And one of the things he's got to do really is get the fair markets moving between the nations and really turn things around so that the debt that keeps going up and up starts to turn around going in the other direction. And I think he's got a good plan, and I think he's the perfect guy for this. I mean, look, he turned a bankruptcy of his own into a far greater success than he had before it. So he's the perfect guy in the White House. He understands it. He knows that the Federal Reserve is illegal, it's unlawful, and that it's evil. And so we got the right guy for the right time, and we'll see what happens. But I agree with Brent on this thing. What are they going to do? What's China going to do? They're going to go to war? No, they're not going to do that.
They can't.
Look, I'm sure they've already discussed it. And look, they know as well as we know that the people of the United States really didn't cause this problem and didn't do it. It was the bankers. We'll go after the bankers. We'll seize their gold. We'll seize their silver. We'll seize their properties. We'll seize everything they got. And they got it all. Believe me, they got it all. Just think about what Rothschild has. And we'll take it back and we'll divide it amongst the nations and we'll go forward and we'll all be happy. We'll get a piece and probably get more than what we even lost to some degree, I'm sure, because these people are just loaded with everything. They've stolen the world is what they've done. They've stolen justice. They've stolen everything. So, remember, Trump's talked with China and he's talked with Russia and of course, the problem over there with Korea. There's a lot of good things going on and a lot of things behind the scene. And there is a war going on. There's a civil war, and people are being killed in a real way all over the world because we're up against the deep state, and they are fighting tooth and nail. All that when Trump went over there and did that bombing and everything going on there in Syria and everything, look, he was working with them. He wasn't going up against Syria. He freed those people. He was going after the deep state. That's who he was blowing up out there. And
there's a whole lot going on in Syria that a lot of people don't know about. I know that.
He used it as a cover story. He said, okay, we'll call it what you want to call it, and we'll go in and let the people think what they want. But look, meanwhile, he worked out things with Russia. He worked out things with the president of Syria, and he worked out things with China and with Korea and moving on from there into the Middle East. Look, they all know. And they really want to get free from the deep state. Why do you think this guy in Korea turned on a dime? Why do you think? Because really it's the point. He knew it was the deep state. He knew it was the CIA and the evil. And they were using America to move this process forward and to do all these killings and destructions and war and starving people and so on and so forth. And they know now Russia, China, the United States, we're getting together to take down the deep state. And they're not just here. They're all over the world. So we're all fighting them. And it's a world war going on right now behind the scenes. It's a civil war. People are dying. People are going to prisons. And it's happening. It's happening. We're just not hearing it. It's just being quiet. And, they are trying to make an all-out war, and they're not going to succeed. I don't think they are anyway from what I see going on. Whoever thought we'd be where we're at today?
Korea,
whoever thought? You know, we've been worried about this New World Order, you know, making their move. They waited too long to begin with. So they've lost it all. I mean, we got the upper hand. Who would ever think that things would turn the way they turned? And it just all happened on one election, period. One election. That's all it took. You know, evil works for 100 years to get to a place, and in 1 year you could take it all down and turn it, and it's happening right before our eyes. Everything's turning around. It's an amazing time to live, and my only concern is I think we're close to Judgment Day, and people need to repent and focus in on their soul and their relationship with God. I mean, meanwhile, we have to, occupy, and so we keep fighting the fight.
Right.
All right. Let's move on to the next call. Yep, we can hear you.
You're exactly right. It's coming, but the real reason why North and South Korea came together after all these years is not being televised. I can say that for a fact. But I'll move on.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. I can say, you know, look at one thing we do know. Anyway. You got to mute yourself there. We're getting whatever's going on there, Felicia. But anyway, just be concerned and listen in, you know, what's going on, because, you know, anybody who's reading their Bibles knows that, you know, the Lord said the end will come when you'll see signs in the sun and the moon, and anybody paying attention, there's all kinds of things happening up there in the skies. Our skies are changing quickly and tremendously. When you hear peace and safety at last, it's when sudden destruction comes, judgment.
I watch it daily, and the signs are in heaven.
I don't think we're far from that. I really don't. But meanwhile, we've got the good fight to fight, and we need to continue. Okay, thanks a lot, Felicia. We're going to go to our next caller. Got a couple more callers, so we still have a little more time.
Hi,
Cynthia.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
Yourself? Massachusetts.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm hanging in there. You know, I'm just like locked in a room almost, just studying all this stuff to try to understand like what is happening to me and to many other people. And I just really connected to what Brent was saying regarding his trip in Boston. It has changed. I'm not even sure Massachusetts is sovereign anymore at this point, you know. I just want to say, because I don't know what else to call my situation and many other people I talk to or hear about. The only thing I can say, I'm literally in slavery. That's the only way I can describe what this is. Then when you try the courts, you try to correct errors, and you get jokes back in the mail from all levels of government, and this is during the last administration, and you get no remedy, and you try everything, and you're just using common sense, you know, you're not a law scholar, and you don't get anywhere, and you just realize that you were selected for liquidation. That's the only way I can, and that's slavery, basically. So I just want to...
Yeah.
We
are as slaves, and people need to wake up to realize it. I mean, look at, they forced upon us these begin with birth certificates, Social Security cards.
Right.
You can't live a life without those things. No. They force us into having driver's licenses.
Yes, but it's hard for me to.
The whole thing boxes you
right.
in. We're boxed in. We can't open up a court of record. They only have civil courts
right,
available,
right,
which are
right,
statutory courts.
Right.
If you commit a crime,
right,
if you really do
right,
commit a crime, you go to criminal
right,
court. You don't go to a court
right,
of record. You don't
right,
get a true jury. I mean,
but you know
we
what?
Are,
it's really,
we are in
it,
prison.
We are. But, you know, it's hard for me to say that, because I can go to somebody who has a house, has a car. I mean, that's a different kind of slavery, but, you know, they have to go off to work or 9 to 5, and I can say I'm in slavery, and they'll say, oh, I'm in slavery too. No, I'm talking about losing everything. you're losing your family, losing your children, losing your home, losing your ability to work. Because I don't want to, after what happened here in this state or whatever this jurisdiction is, I don't even want to venture out to work because it could happen again. You know, it was so horrendous, and I can trace it. Number one, I think the state sold our sovereignty, probably everybody's, but at least mine, sold my sovereignty over to some kind of international jurisdiction that I should not be in, number one. And I can trace it all the way back specifically. Yeah, it's contract. So I've been looking a lot into, it goes back to this, what was supposed to have been a mortgage to a home contract that I could afford, that we could have afforded, but the way it was set up, it was a adhesion construction contract, an investment leaseback agreement for annuities and insurance. It was an assurance contract, had nothing to do with real property, okay? And so it's funny when you talk about scripture and everything, because this is also scriptural, what's going on. You know, what has covered our courts, there's a whole layer of fiction. And I know you've talked about that before, you know. They've covered it in admiralty and commerce laws, you know. So all the stuff
that is the key structure. They apply that not only with those statutory processes. They go beyond that and just ignore all law, even that law, if they feel that they're going to lose out on something.
It just doesn't stop.
You can't win in their courts against these people. But, you know, we can win when we come together collectively the way we're doing, continue to collect the evidence and put it together and continue to go forward.
I don't know if that's ever going to happen, because people are, you know, somebody hung up on, I live in Massachusetts, so, you know, we love each other, state, right? Okay, progressive and all that stuff. But I was talking to somebody on the phone, and he was doing this whole anti-Trump thing, and I didn't go along with it, and he hung up on me. So this is like kind of, I'm surrounded with all of this, you know? And I think this whole immigration thing, now they're mad at me because, you know, they're all upset because they feel like something's going to happen to them. And I'm like, well, gee, I went through this for 8 years. You want to hear what it's all about? You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's like, you know, and a lot of other people have been, like, selected for this liquidation stuff. But, you know, basically, I just want to also mention, I love you guys, and I do hope in my heart, I don't know what you want to call it, to restore the Constitution or make the courts recognize there is one and we are entitled to it. You know, whenever that returns.
We have to bring the king back into the court. Once we get the king back into the court, the king is King God, of course. Once we get the king back into the court, everything else falls in place. Our Constitution falls in place. Everything falls in place.
Yeah, and I don't know how.
We are moving into a larger civil war in a sense that I don't believe will ever become violent. I mean, we do have to be concerned, as Gary had mentioned a little earlier, concerning 4th of July coming up. They're trying to get a black flag thing going. They're trying to get violence going because they're in such trouble. I mean, these people are going to jail with all the pedophilia going on, all of these, trafficking, sex trafficking, not just with children, but even with, women, adults. All this stuff, this is going to catch up with them. They got this, they're doing all of this cult stuff and sacrificing, blood sacrifice.
It just goes on and on and on.
They have no other choice. They're losing control, and the only thing they have is to try to get violence in the street. That's the only thing they got.
Right.
And then they got to turn that around, and I think it's too late for them to do anything. But remember a couple of things. Most of these people that they got, really, the bulk of the people, the multitudes of the people that really are falling for this are just people who are being deceived, and most of them are all liberals, and none of them have weapons. to begin with, okay? So they don't, and if they had one, they don't use it anyway. But look, that's one problem that they've got. Now, if you go back and, you know, that's why I say that this civics course is so important, because we have a lot of video in this civics course. And and if you watch through these videos, you learn exactly what they've been doing back in the 60s and the 70s
right.
and the 80s, okay? Mm-hmm. And they were telling the people, they get this communist movement going, and all this stuff is happening. It really went back further than that in the 40s and the 50s. But by the time the 60s came, a lot of violence was going on. They really got a lot of control of the colleges, and they were moving, you know, the students into this idea of really communism, socialism, and they supported them in a lot of the movements of the 60s, and they gave them a lot of money, and they helped them in schooling, and all this other stuff. And they tell them, look, the day's going to come when we'll call for you, and you'll step up. So they got all these people, and they're the people who are in power today. These people are a lot of our congressmen and our senators and even governors and people within our state legislators and in all these positions, also in other positions, science positions and other educational positions and so on. And, you know, they control the professors in the school, bringing their poison and bringing the liberalism and moving God out of the conversation and so on. And so all of these people, those are the people in power now. But you know what? That is a limited number of people. And if you go back and watch these videos that we put together for this course, you will come to an understanding of exactly how they did this. And the other thing is that one of the key videos is a guy named Norman Dodd. He was a chief investigator for the Reese Committee back in the late 40s. And he was investigating un-American activities in our government. And he came to a conclusion of this whole matter. But in a one-hour interview that was with this guy, I mean, he just revealed and pulls the whole thing together to understand exactly what happened, how we got here, and what's going on. And of course, this was all done by a lot of these people who claim to be great people, give money away, you know, they're very, very rich, and they got these trusts, and they're doing all these good deeds. But really, what they're doing is evil. The whole thing is set up to really destroy America.
Right,
between
right.
that and the minions of the New World Order, which is the you know the bar attorneys, okay, which control everything, and I mean they don't do anything. As soon as you go talk to somebody in government, no matter what level it is, immediately they get a lawyer. Well, what is that about? Okay,
They can't
get an answer. They go and talk to the lawyer, and the next thing you know, you're talking to a lawyer. What is this? Okay, this is the system they set up, and this is the part of the system that's going to be the hardest to take down, and that's what we're doing.
Right.
That's what we're working on, and this is why we have to make, particularly, you know, I don't know whether we can get Jeff Sessions or even Senator Grassley, because I think we know Sessions is a lawyer, and probably Grassley is too. You know, they're tainted and injured with the poison that they learned in school and what they think law is, and it's very difficult to turn those people around. But, you know, the president is not, and he's the guy that we really got to get on our side. And that's where the movement really got to take place to really, you know, that. And, of course, without him, we can do it also with critical mass. But with him, we'll reach critical mass immediately if he starts to really push forward the agenda that we're trying to move forward.
It's hard for me to assess where people are on this whole thing. You know, it just seems like there's a lot of, you know, denial going on.
People are
getting distracted.
They're confused. I bump into people, very good, nice people I know for a while and have a good relationship with, and I bring up the name Trump, and forget about it. You know, I mean, they don't go crazy or anything. They really don't know anything.
Right.
They really can't debate or argue any positions. They talk about silly, stupid things like they're not paying attention. This Trump's doing this. Now, the big thing now is he did an executive order, and they turned that against him. You know, I mean, they don't stop. But you see, they're just simple people listening, and they're not really looking into things. They're trying to live a life. They're participating in their families and whatever it is they're doing to make a living, and trying to enjoy a little bit of life and so on and so forth. And they've been sucked into the CNN BS or the ABC or CBS or whatever all those things are.
In all honesty,
that as being the truth, and they don't know. But
in all honesty, I probably would have been.
And they will realize eventually.
But I, to be honest, truly in my heart, I can relate because I think I probably would have been one of those people if I haven't been trafficked around to the extent and lost everything. It's only because of that I had to stop and say, wait a minute, something else is going on. It was constructive. It was constructive. Intentional fraud. To defraud. But it goes back to that crazy UCC thing. And I was wondering if you read an article called Dulocracy in America by R.K. Potter. If you haven't...
I haven't read that, but of course that's one of our major problems, and everybody seems to think we're a democracy. I'm talking about people in power seem
no,
to
think... No, Dulocracy, D-U-L-O-C-R-A-C-Y.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that individual. So.
If you have a chance, because it's like another whole perspective of what's going on, and basically he was saying when that Social Security Trust came about, we somehow gave up our sovereignty through that medium. And the Congress used the Commerce Clause.
Well, remember, we didn't do it. They did it for us.
Right,
that's true.
It
was just a lie and fraud and deceit, all done in darkness, covert stuff.
People
have no clue what's going on with that. They don't understand that we're dealt. To them, we are livestock. That's all we are. That's
basically,
all we are, livestock.
Right.
And we're so dumb. Even when we realize that they call us a person and they call the person a corporation,
right.
We're so dumb that we don't even realize enough to use that against them. Okay, we're a corporation.
Right.
Everything we do, then we should be able to write off. Anything I eat, the house I live in, I mean, everything. We could turn that around on them.
Right.
I mean, don't corporations, you get the write-off, the all the overhead costs. You got to house the corporation. You got to pay people to work. You got to buy materials. You got to feed whatever it is that you have to feed that corporation, fuel or whatever it is, the materials, whatever it is that you got to feed that corporation. All that is a write-off. And so everything we do, our entertainment is required because we're livestock, and that's part of requirements of that.
Well, they're pinning the debt on all of us, and so that's what these courts are. The debt is courts, and they're pinning it all on us. that whole thing. But I'm just wondering, because I'm hearing that this whole thing is around trust law. And that they took the Constitution, us, everything, and put it into that UCC contract trust. And that's why everything's commercial now. That's what I'm hearing right now.
Well,
and that,
I don't think, generally speaking, I agree with you. And I'm not sure, on the specifics.
Yeah, I'm just looking
at
that new angle,
what they've done,
Okay. And so the other question is, I'm wondering if, we should start really going to the Treasury because I'm hearing that it's the Constitution and our rights are still there.
Well, of course our rights are still there. Look, this was a covenant with God. You can't get in the way of the covenant of God. And as Jefferson said, how did he put it? That he talked about the justice of God cannot sleep forever. I forget exactly how he said it, but let me tell you, look at God's judgment. His angry finger is being pointed down here. It's coming one day, or sooner or later, it's coming. It doesn't matter one way or the other. But look at, we are pushing to the point, again, that this is what we're doing here with what we're doing at National Liberty Alliance and building the grand jury, idea that we're putting together and really pushing an education out there. This whole thing is really focused to win the battle in the court. Once you win the battle in the court, we win the entire nation back. You see, you know, what was the Rothschild said, you know, if I control the monies of the nation, you know, I don't care, you know, about anything else, who makes the laws, who runs the law, because he knew he could pay them all off. But the bottom line on that, you still have to control the courts. You know, I don't care. He can have all the money in the world. If we control the courts, we could take them down in a heartbeat. Okay?
Right.
That's it. So that's, of course, the secret. Of course, I don't think they wanted anyone to really think about or know about. And that's why they got bar attorneys. These people are learned in,
right.
you know, the law of Babylon. So
right, basically. But anyway, I just want to just
100%.
Give you that feedback. But I don't know. A lot of people are going to the Treasury to try to get remedy, and that might be.
Well,
like,
I don't know how.
But I don't know that these people. I know. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. I'm like studying trust law, and you know, because this whole thing
yeah,
is about.
I wouldn't mess around with it too much. I tell you, I know one guy who won the battle, and they gave him a big fat check, and he cashed the check after so many days, 30 days, it cleared. And next thing you know, they raided his house, and he's in jail.
Wow.
Okay,
wow.
But he won the game. He won it on the legal side,
yeah.
But they got him, you know, because they're not going to let you, you know, participate in their game where they're making the money. You can't make the money there. It's for them. It's not for you.
Yeah.
You know, they own the gold.
Yeah,
theirs. It's not yours. You can't have any
of
that.
Well, that's what they think.
We're chattel. We're livestock. That's all we are.
Yeah, well.
Anyway.
Anyway. So I want to just thank you. I enjoy listening to the show. I enjoy Brent. He's really relaxing. And I do hope and pray that, you know, for restoration somehow. So God's get in control. And I just want to thank you all for
justice
what you're doing.
Justice will come and will prevail.
Somehow, yes.
Well, it's going to happen. No matter at the end, it's all going to balance out. Nobody's going to escape it.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, anyway, so have a good night, and I'll talk to you all. I'll stay in touch.
Great. Thank you.
I'll take care.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Bye. Okay, one other caller left. We'll take another caller, last caller for the night. Ed, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm here, and I have a comment on this Harley-Davidson deal.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
Harley-Davidson, of course, is an American company. The Harley-Davidson bikes have been American bikes from day one. What the whole business is, they figure there's going to be tariffs in retribution for Trump. So they're going to move some of their manufacturing out to get around the tariffs that they expect the other countries to... put on their bikes. That's what.
And by the time they spend all their money to do what they want to do and get over there, they're only going to injure themselves because everything's going to, I think it's all going to pan out and we're all going to drop the tariffs and that's going to be that. We'll have free marketing for the first time.
Just
that's
to clarify.
So, but I appreciate that. Yeah, I didn't think of it from that angle that, yeah, they're afraid of the retaliation. So
exactly.
Yeah, and that's going to hurt their market because they have a big foreign market, I guess. I don't know. So, okay, anything else, Ed?
That's it.
Okay. All right, we've come to the end of our program here. I appreciate everyone coming, and Lord willing, we will be back next Monday. And until then, we'll see you. God bless. Good night.